I feel like we're in a Volkswagen commercial. Doesn't it have that kind of a feel?
It does. I'm okay with that. Where are we driving?
I don't know. I'll go almost anywhere. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. This is it's Monday. Quit messing around. It's time to get to work, everybody. It's Monday. 312-981-7200 is our phone. If you want to call us or text us, we would love to hear from you.
The world is still here, so we're doing well.
The world is still here, although you have to admit, like him or dislike him, it was an interesting beginning to his presidency. Wouldn't you agree?
Everything's pretty interesting, Bill.
Yeah. It depends on, I guess, if you like interesting. And I normally am a big fan of interesting. Given the alternative, interesting or boring, almost anybody would take interesting. But I don't know how interesting this can be before we all just pass out. You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean.
The number of people who showed their distaste for the presidency and for everything that he represents was amazing to me. I didn't think we'd see anywhere near the numbers we saw at the various marches, not just in Chicago, but around the world.
Do you have any comment on Madonna or Ashley Judd? Because I kind of do.
Go ahead. Have at it.
Madonna said something that bothered me. I honestly didn't mind her swearing on CNN twice. Yeah. Three times, I think.
Three times a lady.
And that she
I saw Lionel Richie there in the crowd, too.
Was he there?
It was nice, yeah.
But the bombing of the White House thing disturbed me a lot.
That's a little much.
It's not working when you do
right.
that.
Right.
Ashley Judd was so unbelievably animated. And again, we have the right to say what we want and do what we want. Facebook has not been fun anymore. I miss the babies, pets, and food.
Right.
So please, let's just make it that from now on.
No one has a casserole they can post a picture or two of? Come
really?
On.
I need a new casserole recipe. On. But, you know, just the vitriol that's out there, it's really disturbing to me. If someone wants to march and stand up for women's rights and hope that they're not taken away, so be it.
Right.
It was peaceful for the most part.
For the most part, it was very peaceful. Amazing considering the numbers of people who showed up that it was, for the most part, peaceful.
I've never run into so many people who I never thought would be at a march who went to that march. You know what I mean?
Can you say who?
No, I mean, people in my life. People, I mean, no one I'm related to, but friends or friends of friends. And, you know, it just brought out so many people who weren't, who probably didn't consider themselves activists or someone who'd protest in the past.
And, right.
It was just, Saturday was one of the most remarkable political days I have lived through.
I would imagine.
It's pretty cool for young people. There were protests. We kind of missed the protests. We missed the Vietnam. We kind of missed a couple of
just by virtue of how old we are.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And this is just, a chance for young people, girls most specifically, to just show what they believe in. And I kind of think it's pretty exciting.
My wife and my daughters went and said that it was one of those things they couldn't even consider not going to, that it was too important to them to not attend. And I was right on the fence. And I can't even answer. Like, if you ask the question, well, then why didn't you go? There's no real answer to why I didn't go. I just didn't go. But they went and they said that they felt that it needed to be done and they felt fulfilled by the fact that they were there. And I'm proud of them for being there.
I had a funeral to attend Saturday, but even if I didn't, I don't know that I would have gone. And I don't want, I mean, I support the women. I've seen Facebook friends that went that are actual friends, not just collections that I have. And I would click like and way to go, but I didn't feel it in my bones to go.
Right.
Does that make it, am I bad?
No.
Is that wrong?
No. And I watched a bunch of it on TV. They showed clips on TV, and I'm in full support. You know, people have said, I think we've had texters who said, if this was reversed, if the person you wanted to win had won, how would you feel about this all going on? I think that part of what the country is if you're not thrilled with something, you should either do something about it. I don't know what you do about it at this point. He's the president, so it's too late. I am kind of disappointed in the fact that there wasn't this much of a showing prior to the election, but I don't think anyone anticipated Donald Trump winning the election. I don't think anyone anticipated it, or you might have seen this sort of action prior to the election.
But when it came down to just Hillary and Donald Trump, isn't that the time to protest?
Yeah, but even when it was just down to the two of them, I'm trying to remember who I was listening to Friday night talking about. Oh, it was on Bill Maher's show about how a month prior to the election, Republicans were jumping ship left and right, just saying, we don't want to be part of this party, a party that has him as the candidate. They were all just dodging and going, I want out, I want out. And then he won, and all those people that were running away came running back going, all right, now we're in power, now we're good, you know. And they said what that does is it says that politics is really more self-survival than it is anything else, and it is. I've said all along, it sickens me how people will denounce somebody. People on the same party will denounce somebody, and then as soon as it looks like they're the person, then all of a sudden they're friends again. If Donald Trump had said the things about me that he has said about the people around him, you can pick the guy. He accused one of the other candidates' fathers of being in on the Kennedy assassination.
Right.
All right, so if somebody said that about my dad, number one, I would think it was hysterical because my dad was not part of the Kennedy assassination. But then I would also hold a slight grudge and go, wait, aren't you the guy that said my dad was in on the Kennedy assassination? I would not be friends with him. I would not say kind things about him. I would not smile when standing next to him.
Was that an incident of an alternative fact?
That was an alternative fact.
And really, I wish Dispenza's Castle of Toys was still around because Kellyanne Conway could have stood guard in front of it.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it.
Interesting, right.
It's been an interesting couple of days. It'll be an interesting couple of years.
So Sean Spicer will hold his first briefing where he takes reporters' questions this afternoon.
Does he address what was said on Saturday or not, Steve?
It's coming up. We're going to carry it at 12:30 this afternoon.
But if you're him and you're planning on what you're going to say, do you make mention? And for people who don't know what I'm talking about, the very first thing Sean Spicer said on Saturday is he commented on the size of the crowd at the inauguration, saying that the press is underplaying it.
The biggest crowd ever.
So
he said a number of other things that were... easily proven to be false.
Like, I know.
That's what I'm confused
hundreds of thousands
about.
Trying to get in. I think, and I've watched this guy's. I've seen this guy on political shows and things for years. So I'm accustomed to him a little bit. I just felt that he was reading something that he had. If you even looked at him, he was reading it, and he was trying to get through it. And I just feel like there must have been hostages on a boat somewhere that he was trying to save. You know what I mean?
One of the things I wanted to ask you today is, in your opinion, because I know you know of Sean Spicer's work and you know about his history and stuff like that. Does Spicer himself say, I'm going to start this off talking about the numbers? Or does that come from Donald Trump or somebody?
Oh, yeah.
Some intermediary
I can't imagine that was him. In fact, there's some reporting in the New York Times that there were, remember, too, it was delayed by an hour.
Yeah.
And that there was some fighting in the Oval Office, or not in the Oval Office, but in the administration about whether to go this way or to go that way and things like that. So I think, who's ever side won, Sean Spicer had to utter the words. And maybe those were his words. I don't know. But it just, if you're coming out and this is the first time you're going to have sort of an engagement with the White House press corps as press secretary, and you say things that are,
alternatively truthful.
And
well,
can
I
be
mean,
proven.
A sixth grader could have proven that what he was saying was incorrect in a matter of minutes.
I know.
So that's a terrible and really an unfortunate way to start. For all of us,
well,
that's
it sets
an
a precedent of the truth is pliable. The truth isn't definite.
But do you say, if Donald Trump is telling you this is what I want you to say and you don't believe it to be true, do you say, I can't do that?
Right.
I think it's easier to say that on day 15 than it is on day one or day two, So
I guess
I'm willing to if that's the reality, if those are the sets of facts we're playing with, that he didn't want to say it, but he was told to, I think that's hard to say, I quit on day one. It might be easier down the road if this becomes a practice and what he's... Sort
yeah, but his first
to
impression to all of us, not good.
Not a good one.
No,
but,
and look, aside from the whose side you're on, we need there to be a relationship here of some mutual trust in that room.
There should be.
No matter who is president or who's sitting in the seat. So, so it was bad for all of us the way it started.
The bigger part of this, though, Steve, is that the president shouldn't care. The president shouldn't care about how many people attended the inauguration and make it a point to rub our noses in the fact that he had a huge, the largest crowd of all time. I don't know any other president that would make that a priority to discuss that right at the very beginning. Do you?
No. I mean, there might be some who would be really ticked by the way it was being played or whatever.
Yeah.
But it seems to be an odd fight to start. And, this came a couple hours after the president was at CIA headquarters and blamed the media for creating a feud between him and intelligence agents. And, all you have to do is go through the president's tweets.
I know.
To see that that's not how it started.
All right. It takes another bizarre twist with Kellyanne Conway. We'll play a little bit of audio of her over the weekend and how she handled Sean Spicer. Stick around. It's an interesting day, I promise. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's us. It's Phil Lefton. It's Wendy Snyder. We're talking about the first weekend of the Donald Trump presidency. If you're just joining us, we're focusing mostly on Sean Spicer. He, of course, the White House press secretary, as he's explaining to everybody that Donald Trump had the largest inauguration of all time. And he went on to say some other things, as Steve pointed out, fairly easy to disprove them. And it starts out his relationship with the press, if not Donald Trump's, on a slightly bumpy note. All right. So here's what you have after that. On yesterday's edition of Meet the Press, Kellyanne Conway is the guest, and Chuck Todd brings up the very situation we're discussing, and listen very closely as Kellyanne Conway brings up the term alternative facts. What I want you to do is try to focus on the way she struggles to find the right word or words to describe the discrepancy between Sean Spicer and the truth. Listen.
Why put him out there for the very first time in front of that podium to utter a provable falsehood? It's a small thing, but the first time he confronts the public, it's a falsehood?
Chuck, I mean, if we're going to keep referring to our press secretary in those types of terms, I think that we're going to have to rethink our relationship here.
It undermines the credibility of the entire White House press office
Don't be so overly dramatic about it, Chuck. What you're saying, it's a falsehood, and they're giving Sean Spicer, our press secretary, gave alternative facts to that. But the point remains.
Wait a minute. Alternative facts, four of the five facts he uttered.
Was
Zeke Miller. Four of the five facts he uttered were just not true. Look, alternative facts are not facts. They're falsehoods.
Is that a phrase anyone's ever heard before? I don't think I've ever heard alternative facts prior to yesterday.
No, but a thumbs up to her for coming up with that. Because it doesn't, I don't know if she had, thought about that before, if it just came to her, but it, pretty impressive.
It's already interesting that what most of us would refer to as a lie, you give him a little bit of carte blanche and you call it a falsehood, which is a polite way of saying he's a
liar.
That guy's lying. You can say falsehoods, it dresses up a little bit, but alternative facts makes it an entirely different animal, doesn't it?
I was shocked to see that.
If I'm a kid right now and I want to lie to my parents about anything, I explain to them that I'm not lying. I'm using alternative facts, just like they do in Washington.
I think kids have been doing it for a long while. They just didn't know what to call it.
Well, I got news for you. They've been doing it in Washington for a long while,
yeah.
Too. But it's just... Right. Everyone has their view and their spin and their way to present things. And I think that's apparently what she was saying. It just, what's striking about this one was how, demonstrably false some of the things that were said were. I mean, it's one thing you can say that this tax cut will mean this, or we've shown, things that may or may not come out to be true or be true big picture. But this was like saying today is Tuesday.
Right. All right. So with everything that we have said, Sean Spicer addresses the press today at 12:30, Steve. How does he handle this? Does he make this better? Does he make this worse? Does he say, look, I know there was some discrepancy over what went on over the weekend. How do we fix this?
That's a great question. I mean, if he's going to defuse it, which I'm sure he wants to.
Yeah.
I'm sure everyone wants. I mean, I don't think the press wants it to keep going either. You'd think he would start with, maybe an apology or a joke.
Right.
Or something like that. And I think that'd be a pretty good sign if we see that how it begins. If it doesn't, if it's a dukes up sort of thing, We could be in for a long situation.
Maybe bring a fax machine on stage with him, and at some point during the conference go, excuse me, I'm getting an alternative fax like that, and play a drum roll.
He needs a joke writer now, or he needs, you know, just to bring in a little humility with it. I don't know. I mean, or maybe just say, look, here's what I was trying to say. I didn't say it well.
Yeah.
I spoke inartfully, but here was the point I was trying
to make. Wouldn't that be the right move?
He's not going to do that.
I don't know that he will do that, but that would be the proper way of handling this.
And history was made when Barack Obama became president. So you're going to get people wanting to see the first black president. Why didn't they say something like that? Like, you know, history was being made, but we did pretty well too, or something, anything like that.
No, you don't even address it.
You just
leave it alone. I mean, look, there weren't nearly as many people at Barack Obama's second inauguration as his first. You just let it go. And there are going to be lots of times when things are said or things happen that are factual that don't work in your favor. And if you try to refute each one of them, you're going to bury yourself. Just let it go.
And, you know, really, I don't need to see the picture of the comparison of Donald Trump's hands hanging by his side and Barack Obama's. Although I giggled, who cares? Come on. I did giggle. I got to tell you.
No, I get it. All right. We will take a break. Steve has the news, and then there's a lot more show coming your way next. Bill and Wendy, WGN. First of all, I could listen to this song all day.
I know you didn't want to talk over it.
I don't want to talk. It's like the national anthem to me, the James Bond theme. The Safe House, which is one of the coolest bars, not just in Milwaukee, but anywhere, one of the most fun places you could ever want to spend an evening, is coming to Chicago. It's about time. Greg Marcus, the CEO of Marcus Hotels and Resorts, and Peggy Williams, Senior Vice President of that same establishment, are here in studio with us to talk about the Safe House coming to town. Hi, guys. How are you?
Good morning.
Hello.
We're excited about this. I've spent so many nights at the Safe House in Milwaukee, and I always thought to myself, this would kill in Chicago. Why don't we have one? Well, you've taken care of that.
Can I jump in and say I'm embarrassed? I don't know what the Safe House is. I've lived here my whole life.
So nobody's listening, right?
No.
I'm not kidding.
It's top secret. I mean, we'll tell you.
All right, because I'm very embarrassed. Bill's talking about it. Oh, I love this place. How could you not know? I don't know.
Okay, well, the exact definition of a safe house is a refuge for spies. So I'm sure this doesn't help you at all. what the safe house is an immersive spy experience, and it is a fun. It's a restaurant and a bar with a spy overlay. And
how cool is that?
Yeah, it is as Peggy and I were talking about it today. She's actually Agent Blonde. And I'm actually Agent BB. So anybody who heard our names, you're sworn to secrecy.
Disregard those names.
Disregard
them. And if you don't have names by the end of the interview, we'll give them to you.
Oh, spy
all right,
names?
Good. I've never had a nickname. This is the most exciting
Get
day
ready.
Of my life.
Yeah. Oh,
Get
yeah.
Ready.
Well, definitely. Put my mind on that. All four brain cells are going to be cooking away.
So it's an interactive dinner bar experience.
Yeah. I mean, said simply, it's a spy theme bar. It is a spy movie come to life, whether it's James Bond or The Bourne Identity or Mission Impossible. It is all those movies come to life in the setting of a safe house. And a safe house, as I said, is a refuge for spies. And so what we've done is created the elements that make a safe house up. So if you think about it, you know, what would be the first thing that would happen if you went to a refuge for spies? Well,
you would need a password to get in.
You would need a ding, ding, ding.
Bingo.
You need
a password. You're good
at
this.
You can't get in without a password.
Stuff.
Yes, exactly. And if you don't know the password, you can get in, but
you're
treated shabbily.
A little test. There'll be a little test.
When did the Safe House first come to Milwaukee? It's been decades and decades, hasn't it?
We just celebrated our 50th birthday as the Safe House. Now, the Safe House is celebrating it. We're the current custodians of the Safe House. Control really started the Safe House, and I can't even tell you who that is. But it was really started by a guy named Dave Baldwin in Milwaukee 50 years ago, and he had this idea. He thought it'd be really fun. Doesn't it sound like fun?
It really does.
Because it is. To have a spy-themed bar. And that's what he did. And he started it 50 years ago, and he just kept building on it. And if you go there, what you see is layers and detail and collecting. And he spent 50 years doing that. And he really created something that was very special. And yet, something that was timeless, because spying is timeless. You know, one of our businesses, one of the things that dawned on us was that the our company, one of the businesses that we're in is we're Marcus Theaters. So we're around Chicago with Marcus Theaters. We've been in the theater business 80 years. We've made a lot of money off the spy story, you know, because they keep making the same movie over and over again, and people keep showing up, and they love it. I do. I can go watch every James Bond movie every time. Yeah. You know, who doesn't? It's a great theme, and so this takes that and applies it to a restaurant setting, and we said, and that's what makes it last for 50 years,
right? You guys haven't put these in any other markets besides Milwaukee and now Chicago, right? We're the second ones to have a safe house. Why did you choose Chicago? Is it just the proximity, or was there some other reason for it?
There's no better city in the world.
That's the right answer.
There you go.
That's the right answer.
How far is Milwaukee from here? Because I want to know why my family never took me there when I was...
96 minutes.
That's it?
Yeah, that's right. That's how it is. You also, in addition to having all the theaters, Mark's Big Boy belongs to your family as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, unfortunately, there really aren't too many. There aren't any more Mark's Big Boys.
Are they all gone?
They're all gone, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That I remember.
Yeah.
That's sad. But the Mark Plaza is still yours,
yeah,
right?
It's the Hilton now.
Is it the Hilton?
It's the Hilton Milwaukee, but it's our hotel still.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep. You can still get the Big Boy sandwich in certain places. For example, we have the hotel, the Intercontinental in Milwaukee. It's more of a chef's inspired version of the Big Boy, but it's still really good.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's
road
good
trip
to know.
After
yeah,
the show
I'll do
today.
It right after
yeah,
the show.
I got your whole day planned. You can go to the safe house, and then you can go get a Big Boy at the Intercon, and then go to our Miller Time Pub, you know, just to cap it off.
Greg, I was telling you before we went on air, when they filmed the original Major League in Milwaukee, which your brother worked on, and I got to know your brother a little bit while working on the movie, we would go to the safe house a couple nights a week over that summer. And I had been there in the past, but the more you get there, the more time you spend there, the more fun it is somehow. I can't explain what it is, but you just become more familiar with it, and you see people come in and experience it for the first time. And that's always a fun thing.
Yeah, you're exactly right. That's what struck me. You know, everyone in Milwaukee says the same thing. Oh, I love the safe house. That's the greatest place. When was the last time you were there? 20 years ago.
Oh, no.
You know, it just is part of the fabric.
Yeah.
And even I was that way. And we'd heard that that Dave Baldwin and his wife, Shauna, were interested in selling it and moving and sort of in retiring because they'd had it for 50 years. And so I know the safe house. I didn't really think about it. I thought, you know what? No. Don't do that. Go look at it.
Yeah.
And I went, and I remember how great it was, and I walked around, and I started seeing that those layers, that depth. The more you go, the more you see.
Right.
That's our challenge, actually. You know, how do you create that? But I'll tell you, we just came from it. We're just finished getting it ready, and I'm starting to see those layers. I don't know of any operation in town here that has that kind of depth that we're putting into this, and it will still continue to grow because we'll keep adding those layers with time.
You know, what's always fun there is to see a guy order a martini and then pause and go, shake and not stirred, and then look around the room like, I'm the first one that's done that, I bet.
Oh, yeah. We never hear that.
We have a caller, 312-981-7200, who wants to talk about his experience at the Milwaukee Safe House. Is this John? Hi, John.
Oh, yeah. Hey, how you doing? Can I talk about, I don't want to give anything away about how to find it or if there's any, but I had never heard of it, and we had some friends who wanted to double date for Valentine's a couple of years ago and go to the Milwaukee Safe House. And she said we need a password to get in. We didn't know the password, but we're trying to find it because the address is kind of wacky, and we're driving up and down. We're in this alley, and I'm a big James Bond fan. I've read all the books. In fact, I'm a James Bond Ian Fleming fan. And I see on the door this little plaque, and it says, Universal Exports. That's it.
Perfect.
The one in, yeah. So if you're in the know, it's really fun. You know, they were like, what are you talking about? But I thought this has got to be it. Even though the address doesn't match up with the address we're trying to Google and find on our GPS.
Well, how do you find it then? This is all so new to me.
Well, it's all pretty mysterious, but it's pretty fun when you go in because you have to go through a slight interrogation process. Two at a time. Then when you go in, you watch your friend going through it, and it's really pretty comical.
Did you have to do a clearance test?
Had to do a clearance test, of course. Had to be sort of background screened, you might say.
I'm in the dark.
You would
here.
Love this.
I know. It really sounds so much fun.
You feel like you're in a movie.
Well, and that's the thing. You can't tell anybody about it.
Right.
He's hit it exactly right. When you can't. In here in Chicago, you can't put a sign up, you know, with arrows, safe house here. Let's think about that one for a minute. That ruins it. The only way you'll find it is it says international exports.
Does Chicago have universal export on it too?
It will.
Something similar to universal exports. Yeah. Maybe it says international exports.
International exports.
Well, John, thank you for calling and stay tuned because they will not give the address of the new safe house here in Chicago soon.
Okay, then I won't be listening.
Perfect. Thanks for not calling. All right, we'll take a quick break. Greg Marcus and Peggy Williams are here. The Safe House is coming to town, a great bar in Milwaukee for years and years, a bar and restaurant. Now you can visit the Chicago version soon. Stick around. More to come. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, Bill, I've never really felt so lost in the middle of an interview before in my life. Greg Marcus, CEO of Marcus Hotels and Resorts, and Peggy Williams, Senior Vice President of Marcus Hotels and Resorts. We're talking about the Safe House, which is celebrating its 50th birthday in Milwaukee. And now sometime soon, we're going to see Safe House 2.0 here in Chicago.
Absolutely. We can't tell you exactly when, though.
Or you'll have to kill me? Exactly. Is that how it works?
Yes.
That's how it happens. Yeah.
I'm going to have someone kill you. I can't do it myself.
You don't want to get your hands all messy. Come
so
on.
Messy.
You're wearing nice clothes. What will the differences be? Or can you say that? There will be some subtle differences, I'm guessing, between what goes on in Milwaukee and Chicago. What will you do differently?
The essence of the Safe House will remain exactly the same. Obviously, we'll have some upgraded technology and some upgraded experiences when you walk in. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, everything that you see in Chicago in Milwaukee will be replicated in Chicago.
You guys have learned some things. I know you didn't have it from its very inception, but upon taking it over, there's, I'm sure, a learning curve for you guys. What have you changed a little bit from the old days of the Safe House?
Yeah, I guess I would say it's replicated as I use the word more inspired.
Yeah.
You know, so the things that are similar are going to be that we're going to have, we have this password protected entrance.
Yeah.
We have multiple exits and a secret exit, which is, of course, you got to have a secret exit.
Always.
For your safe house. Yeah, the safe house in Milwaukee, it was interesting. Probably the biggest difference was when you go in the safe house, the way it is sort of laid out is it's laid out by countries, sectors. So there's the Asian sector, and there's the French sector, and there's the German sector. It was, first of all, done in a time where the Cold War was going. And
yeah, there was a time we were scared of Russia. Remember that?
Yeah, exactly. What the first question I asked Dave was, as we were trying to think this through, okay, is that going to play today?
Yeah.
You know, how will that work? And I started thinking about it, and I said to Dave, I have this question, how important, and he was the founder, how important is it to organize this by country and region? And he said, you know, it really wasn't. It was just sort of something they did to give it a flavor of international. And then everything has a good rationalization.
Sure.
It all comes back to, well, you know, if you're a spy and you're from around the world, you should feel comfortable wherever you are, right? So if you're a French spy, you go to the French area.
Yeah.
If you're, you know, a German spy, you go to the German area. So if you're a Russian spy, you go to the Russian area. So what we thought, well, that might not play as well today, you know, if we've got
segregation.
A whole new generation. So we said, let's organize it more like what would be the elements of a safe house. So we have a surveillance and reconnaissance area.
Cool.
We have an area called the gadget bar where Q, you know, from all where all the cool gadgets are.
And I'll be hanging out there, I have a feeling.
Yeah, there's we were just looking at it today. So many cool gadgets, and where else can you get it? I think it's Iocane powder. Instead of seeing the Princess Bride to know that.
Will you be serving espionachos?
Oh, yeah, there we
down.
Go.
Write that down. Wendy's giving you a $1 million idea. Write it down.
Right there. But the, yeah, with a magician. What were the things that were important too? So the theming's a little different, and it should be, because we didn't want to build a replica. But Milwaukee has, I think, Peggy, what were you telling me? The
longest running magic bar in the world.
Does it really? Yeah.
It does.
Yeah. Wow.
Because a spy is a little bit magic.
Sure.
Yeah.
And so we have a magician that we'll always have a magician there in Chicago.
Very nice. Food-wise, what do you recommend when people come to the Safe House? What should they try?
Well, now the Espionachos.
Right. There's you already can
have
a line.
That. Do I have to wear a slinky dress? Can I be a spy myself, or do I have to be a spy girl? You know how the Bond girls are?
You can be anything you want when you walk in.
Yeah.
I like this.
The Spy Burger is something you have to try when you come to the Safe House in Chicago.
That's
it's
a favorite.
It's amazing. Jim. Absolutely.
What did Agent Nacho?
Yes. Yes.
I mean, I'm just thinking out loud here. We need to give you spy
I names. Do need an agent name.
I think this is Greg's favorite part of this whole new area we have is creating agent names for people.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. One of the things that we thought about, and this is I learned this from Chicago, really, was from The Palm. You know, remember how everybody's faces were up in The Palm?
Yeah.
Well, we have an app. And in the app, we're creating agent files. And if you're cool enough, Agent Nacho, you will definitely be in our app. And it'll be like you, because you'll want to see yourself. Only the coolest agents are in our app with, you know, a little bit of background information.
I like that.
You should have a wall of pictures, but everybody's covering their face so nobody can tell who it is.
That would be funny. We are giving them so many ideas right now.
We're idea people. All right, let's say, and we know this will be a huge success, somewhere down the line, do you say to yourselves, well, we have one in Milwaukee and it's working, Chicago's working, let's put them all around the country. Has that come to you? I bet it has.
Oh, yeah. Every few minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we do. That's what our...
Because everyone loves that culture. Everyone loves that mysterious spy culture. I can't think of any place that wouldn't want something like this. That's perfect.
Yeah, that's the trick. That's what we're going
to... That's what's next. Good. Yeah. Good.
One at a time, though.
Yeah.
So how will we... this is probably the dumbest question I'm ever going to ask, but when Spy House or Safe House 2.0 comes to town, how will we know where to find it?
We're going to tell you.
All right.
We'll give you a general
region.
It's
all secret. I don't know what
secret.
To do here.
Yeah. It's a PR nightmare.
It's located somewhere in downtown Chicago.
Okay, that
right.
helps.
That narrows it down.
Are we going to give them? Are we not? Where is it?
See what I mean?
You'll be able to go and look at the coordinates,
yeah.
Enter them into Google, and it'll give you the location.
Love it.
Oh, well, let's give them another hint. Let's give him a hint.
It's a few blocks from a Starbucks.
What are the things?
I think I just tipped
you
it
did.
In.
You
Everyone
did.
Knows
there
where
you
it
go.
Is now.
It's, okay, so here, we should while we're here, we should talk about one of the things that we came up with that we did, and we just opened it recently, and so this is going to give you a clue. It's somewhere near another business. We came up with something called the Escape House. Have you ever done an escape room?
No.
Okay, so an escape room.
They just did this on The Middle last week, by the way, and it looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's really fun. It's really cool. So an escape house, escape room, they're popping up around the country. Very quickly, it's you have an hour to get out of a room. And so the first one, Agent Blonde and I did in Milwaukee, we went to one, and we didn't know what we were getting into. We go to this office, and they tell us, okay, here's the deal. We've arranged for you to get into Mr. Dupree's office for an hour. He's a businessman, but he's really not a businessman. He's a spy. And you have to find a whole bunch of stuff in his office and figure out where the meetup is. And if you could do that in an hour, you win. And we're like, okay, well, we did it. And it turned out to be a blast. And we thought, okay, be a spy for an hour. Wow, this sounds awfully familiar. We just bought a spy bar. We should put this as part of our spy bar.
Yeah.
And so the first thing we did here in Chicago, we opened it a few months ago. It's called the Escape House. It's on Ontario, just west of Rush on the north side. It's called the Escape House. And we created two escape rooms. I call it the amuse-bouche for the Safe House that you can...
Say that word one more time for me, Greg.
Amuse bouche.
All right.
It's with an expression. The pre-appetizer. It's the appetizer's appetizer. It's just a little taste of what the Safe House is going to be like. And so we created two rooms. One is called Save the White House, and we built a 75% replica of the Oval Office. And it is so cool. I've been in a lot of escape rooms. Our production values, we want it to be immersive, like the Safe House. You walk into that facility, the Escape House, and you are a spy from the minute you go in. And then we also did Save the Safe House, which is another play on how you have to find our Safe House, and a part of our Safe House, and save it. And so you have an hour. In each one of these, you have an hour, and they're a blast. If you can find the Escape House, then you'd be able to find the Safe House.
And when are we expecting this to be opened?
sometime in the next month or so.
Oh.
The Safe House, yes.
That's coming.
Yes,
that's
it is.
Coming.
It's coming.
Escape House is open now.
It's already open.
Escape House is open. Fun. Safe House is coming. Greg Marcus, who broke the record for saying the words amuse-bouche on the show. Amuse-bouche? What's that? That's separate.
That's off the air, Bill.
That's off air. And Peggy Williams, both here, inviting you to come find the Safe House and enjoy it. It's a Milwaukee tradition for 50 years, and it's opening here very, very soon. Guys, thanks so much. Really appreciate
What's
you being
your
here.
Agent name?
What do I have an agent name?
Go, Greg.
Agent Baseball Cap.
Oh, no. That's
too easy.
No, Agent Major League.
Agent Major League.
Oh, I like
Agent
it.
Major I like that. And Wendy's again is?
Agent Nacho.
Perfect.
Although that makes me feel orange like Donald Trump.
A little. Guys, I hope you have a huge success with this. It's a lot of fun.
Thank you so much.
And then some news. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, when Kim Gordon comes in today, treat her delicately. Her Green Bay Packers lost a very tough game yesterday.
They got spanked.
She's in the house.
Is she here? Does she look like she needs consoling? Is she sad?
You know, she looks like she's okay. But
how did that
Kim,
even happen?
I asked her. She just rolled her head.
Yeah. Rough week.
Well, at least she took some time to relax in Atlanta.
Right.
All I have to say is now Packers fans know what it's like to be a Bear fan.
No, they don't.
Yeah, we go through this every week. Yeah.
I know. What happened?
They were in a game that mattered yesterday.
Yeah, and it didn't look like they,
you
they
know,
brought it.
They looked so... I thought the Dallas Cowboys were going to win it all this year. They really look like a very complete team to me. And Green Bay just held up so well last week, not yesterday. And you say to yourself, well, if they can beat the Cowboys, who knows? They could potentially go all the way, but it didn't happen. They're not that long on defense. They're with Aaron Rodgers at the helm, they're a good offensive team, but their defense isn't really very strong.
That's the question I asked Jimmy Mack this morning. I said, honestly, it's good if you have a football team who has both offense
sure.
and defense, but if one is more important than the other, which is it?
Well, for the Bears in 85, it was certainly defense.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Defense wins championships.
I think so.
Not this year.
Not this time. Well, except the two teams that are in it, both the Falcons and the Patriots have very strong offenses. So we'll see what happens in 2 weeks. But I felt bad for the Green Bay Packers. I never thought I'd say that, but I did because I really thought this was a team of destiny. They were winning games they shouldn't have won against teams they shouldn't be able to beat.
He is such a
you
traitor.
You feel bad for the Packers.
I know. He hates the Bears.
No,
and he's.
I was rooting for the Packers yesterday.
What?
I have to finally say it. I mean,
I took was.
Bill is a man who said it first, Steve,
well,
I'll point out.
But
it was so entertaining to watch for me.
What does that mean, Sean Spicer? I'm just saying I rooted for the Packers.
But you just said, I have to say it now that Bill hates.
Well, it's hard to say. If you live in this city, it's hard to say. We really wanted to see the Green Bay Packers win and go to the Super Bowl, but I did.
I'm not a Packers fan, and I always would say, I just like to watch them play. But, I mean, come on. The fact is I wanted them to win yesterday.
But that's,
I like watching them play.
Think about this. The Packers in our lifetime and beyond our lifetime, prior to our lifetime, what they were built on excellence. They want to win. They know how to win.
Well,
they find ways to win.
I mean,
how about that graphic that goes up every time the Bears and the Packers play on Monday Night Football? They put up a graphic that shows the number of quarterbacks we've had in the last 20 years, 26, versus the number of quarterbacks the Packers have had, 2.
Okay, it's been a while, but there was a time when the Bears could count on 4 wins every year, 2 against the the 4 Bay games.
It's been a while,
right? I mean, so
yeah. Yep.
It's just hard for me to hear you guys say you were going for the Pack.
That doesn't make any
sense
to me.
Here's why. I want the powers that be that run the Chicago Bears to realize there's a great team not that far away and to say to themselves, we need to be competitive too and start doing some things right. The way the Packers do, we just can't seem to get it together, but the Packers almost every year seem to get it together.
Why don't you start a cheese march? The women had their march. You can start a cheese march.
And they started cheese march.
I think there's nothing wrong with saying you enjoy watching a team play. I mean, I would
but
never.
But you said you were rooting for them.
Well, I wanted to see them play in the Super Bowl.
But don't you want to see your rival lose?
No.
Why?
Not this time.
That's so silly to me. I took such pleasure in that game. It was great.
See, but here's the thing, Kevin. You took pleasure in seeing a good team beaten badly. Well, in what? In revenge for your crap team? I mean, I don't
get that. It's crappy now, but that's, no,
you,
it's
well,
not
when you have
always
a crap team, you have to take the small victories, and that was a small victory for the whole entire city of Chicago. Actually, it was a big victory. I'll give us that.
The Packers losing was a victory for Chicago?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh,
you can't like the Packers.
I got news for you. The Bears still only had 3 wins this
year. Okay.
So
that's okay.
I don't know how it makes you feel any better.
And they got blown out in the conference championship. So it's,
right.
You know.
And the Bears got blown out in training camp. And
that's okay.
I don't know why
that's okay.
I don't even know if I'm for the Bears, but I'm certainly against Green Bay. That's all I can say.
But you have to admit, for people who are fed up with the Bears losing and losing and losing and losing and are entertaining the thought of looking for a new team, like
can't
I
go
am.
There. You can't go there.
They don't even skip this. This is a whole other discussion.
I'm considering it.
Once you go, you can't come back, Bill.
I'm all right with
that's
that.
That's a myth, Kevin.
No, it's not. I'll remember.
But I miss during the season. I mean, I've been watching the playoff games because it's the playoffs. But during the season, I miss watching football.
I know.
And the Bears aren't offering me football.
Wayne Larrabee had a tweet last night thanking everyone for their support through the season. And
I saw that.
Not everyone.
To retweet it.
Steve's like, this is not the way I thought it would end.
I know. But don't you marvel sometimes? Aaron Rodgers is one of those guys that seems to be able to do almost anything he wants on the field. We don't have that. I love seeing a guy. Peyton Manning was notorious for that. No matter what, he could get the ball.
We see those players at a lot of Bears games.
Right, but always with the other jersey.
Well,
mostly.
We haven't found our perfect quarterback yet. I don't know that we ever will.
Since Sid Luckman.
There is no quarterback camp that you can just go pluck people from. They're hard to come by. I asked this question before, trust me. Why don't we get a quarterback?
But other teams seem to be able to find it. When the Packers lost their golden boy, Brett Favre, they had another guy ready in the wings. They just nodded
well,
and
part
went,
of
it's
that,
your turn.
They had to push out a golden boy because they had too many golden
right.
boys.
But how much can you put on luck, though? I mean, he had to have fallen to them, which they were successful the year before, so they didn't have a pick until like 28 or something like that. He got skipped over. They were smart in picking him, but you're also, there's a certain element of luck there.
It's been 30 years.
I know. Hey,
yeah,
believe
but
me.
We got a new year coming up, okay? There's a new
president.
They're
not going to be that much better.
There's a new, I know, they're in the building phase, which we should have been told.
Right.
Well, I forgot to mention that.
The building has been condemned, Wendy.
Oh, my God.
All right, we'll take a quick break, and then there's more things to discuss with you. Want to jump in? 312-981-7200 is our number. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Kim Gordon's in the newsroom. She looks like she's been crying.
Are my eyes puffy?
A little bit, Kim. That's all right. Try some healthy Natron.
I will.
All right.
Anything to get over that.
Try some of that.
It's going to take a lot to get over that. Oof.
I remember, I grew up a Dolphins fan, and there was a Dolphins game in the playoffs where Dan Marino and the boys lost by like 35 or 40 points, and I just walked around in a catatonic state for the next 2 days. I just, it's hard to rebound off of that.
Who was the drunk guy that was, alleged drunk guy that was interviewed at the end of the game? The manager of what team? I can't think of his name. That video was going on all over the place.
You don't mean Joe Namath, do you?
No. Who won the game yesterday?
The Atlanta Falcons, you mean?
Who's the Falcons? Matt Ryan.
Oh, he's the quarterback.
No, that's not.
That's not him? Who is
there
it?
There was the manager who was talking about, we just got one more game to win, and everybody on social media was saying he was too drunk to talk.
Oh.
And he didn't seem drunk to me. He seemed like overwhelmed.
Oh.
You didn't see that. I wanted your opinion.
He was
on
with
that.
The winning team.
Yeah.
Imagine if he had lost.
I was heading to the airport then. I did not see that part of it.
So you went. You were at the game. You didn't
we
watch
went.
It on
our
TV.
Whole
you were there.
Went.
Oh,
well,
wow.
A majority of our family went. There were like 12 of us, 12 or 13 of us that went to the game.
I saw that picture on social media,
but
I thought it was...
Part of my family lives in Atlanta, so we went for a family weekend. It was really... I mean, besides the game, it was really fun. The only saving grace is my great-nephew is 9 years old, and he's born, grew up in Atlanta, so he's a very, very excited little boy.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
I would think so. The other thing that needs to be addressed is Tom Brady... of the New England Patriots, when sitting on the sideline yesterday, was wearing a coat that was from, I don't even know how to describe it. It made Tom Brady look like he was three times the size.
I think with the Ringling Brothers Circus closing, he borrowed a tent from them.
Do you remember the episodes?
It looked like a bulletproof jacket. You know how people look puffed up when they have on a bulletproof vest?
Yes.
That's kind of what it looked like.
Times 100.
Do you remember the episodes of Friends where they went back, they showed you early scenes when Monica was a little bit on the portly side and they gave her kind of a fat suit, for lack of a better term? It looked like Tom Brady was understudying the role of Monica on Friends because he was it was Tom Brady's head, but on this giant body. It's just the coat. And it's weird because it wasn't that cold there. Like, you could see if it was below zero, you go, I got to do whatever I can to keep myself warm. But it was like 35 degrees yesterday, so I don't know. Where would you even get a coat like that? You go to Marshall's and just say, so
no.
You sew these three coats together so I'll be warm during the game? It was enormous.
All right, I have to answer my question. And, yeah, I think he got it from Ringling Brothers. It was a tent sale.
Must have been.
All right, Rich, you know what I'm talking about, correct? Rich?
Hello, yes.
All right, so the Patriots owner, is that who I'm referring to?
That is Bob Kraft, the owner of the Patriots, who had a little trouble getting his words out.
Do you think it was alcohol-induced, or what was it?
Well, he's an older gentleman, but I have a feeling he might have had a couple more than he should have.
He started out okay, and then he completely lost what he was saying at the end, but it's okay if the owner has a couple of cocktails during the game, isn't it?
That's
he didn't
okay,
swear on
yeah,
TV.
He,
like
he handed the trophy to Bill
Belichick
and kind of flung it to him, and Bill had this funny face.
You should watch the audio or video. It was I couldn't tell. I just saw, you know, on social media, everyone's like, you know, Bob Kraft, could you have another one? And I don't know if I thought he was drunk. It was just
maybe he was just excited over the victory. Is that possible?
I don't know. You gotta watch it.
I'll
and make
watch
the decision
it.
For yourself. Right. Alternative facts.
You have to check that out. I think he had one too many, but
could be.
I guess he's entitled to that.
And do you know where Tom Brady got his giant jacket?
No, I don't. I really don't know where that could have come from.
It was,
but
like,
you saw it, right, Rich? You know the jacket we're referring to.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
It looks like, you know, for a while he was inflating footballs. Did he use that same inflation device to make his coat really big?
That's a good one.
That is a good one.
Thanks for your call, Rich.
Thanks, Rich. Bill's filled with a lot of good ones.
Yeah.
You know, when was this? In the 70s. My brother was a wrestler in high school, and they would sit in these, like, sauna. They were like a square sauna.
Oh, yeah, after the game to kind of...
Yeah, not the sauna suit,
after the meet.
But it was like just, you know, just your head would be sticking out. That's what it looked like. He had this big thing. I don't know what that was.
Now, is everyone in New England today wearing a version of that coat? You know how we talked about this with the inauguration? People go, oh, the First Lady's wearing one of those. I've got to wear one of those, too. Does that happen with Tom Brady in that coat?
God, I hope not. At least if it's raining, you could have all your friends in there with you. It's that big.
No one else could sit on the bench. There was no room on the bench. He was hogging up the whole bench. I've never seen anything like it before. I didn't know they made such a thing.
I thought I've seen him sitting in something like that before.
A big, oversized, puffy coat?
Got to keep the arm warm, you know?
I
guess the rest of your body.
Everything. Everything. All right. Eric Zorn will join us right after Kim's news. And then this is very exciting. In the second half, a friend of the show, Louis Anderson, joins us. Louis, not just one of the top comics working anywhere, but he has found himself a Plum television role, won a nice award for it a couple of months back. If you haven't seen his role on Baskets, we'll discuss that with him. That's coming up in the second half after the Wintrust Business Lunch. Stay here. There's a lot more show coming your way next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Zorn, 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 the greatest father in all the land. Zorn, 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 we sing the praises of Zorn.
We sure do. Eric Zorn is here from the Chicago Tribune. Do you know that you have an action figure? There is a Zorn action figure.
There is. I like one. You know, I'm a little bit of that song saying the greatest father that ever was born.
Yeah.
You know, the greatest, maybe not.
Top
maybe
10.
Among the greatest.
I would
be
satisfied. We can change the lyrics if you'd like.
No.
Bill can re-sing it.
It's okay. It's okay.
You're all right with that?
Yeah. We'll have it.
Let's talk about the weekend. We talked about it a little bit at the top of the show. Donald Trump inaugurated on Friday, so this was his first weekend as president of the United States. Do you think it went according to plan?
According to plan? I haven't heard that asked quite that way. I think it was awful. I mean, I think it was, for his first 2 days were really, really bad. I thought that the speech itself was way too dark. It was a campaign speech. It wasn't an inaugural speech. It wasn't one of those ones where, you know, campaign speeches inaugural speeches are moments in history where you sort of take a look back, you look forward, you talk about this great country of ours, and you talk about your determination to make things better. This was about, you know, rusted out factories and kids who weren't learning anything, and crime everywhere.
Not enough border patrol.
This American carnage, which Ira Glass said he's going to steal for his radio show. So, but I mean, it was way too dark. He was insulting the people who were on the dais behind him, basically saying you guys are all crooks taking money. Now the people are running this country, and it was what his hardcore supporters wanted to hear, but it wasn't what the better than 50% of the voters and an incredible percentage of the population who are worried about him wanted to hear. It's like, well, this guy has no experience, no political experience. He's a liar. He's a narcissist. Is he going to pivot and become presidential? And the answer was no. Then, of course,
you don't think that was a presidential speech? Because
oh
I do.
No. Oh, you do?
I do.
What kind of president? Because a third world president?
No,
speech?
But hearing what he was saying, who wouldn't agree with that? To make the country great, but I don't like the great again. Let's make it better. That would have been.
Yeah, it was not. It was like it's midnight in America, basically. It wasn't a morning in America speech. Reagan was able to deliver that kind of stuff, and I'm not a big Reagan fan, but Reagan was able to deliver that kind of stuff with a smile, with optimism. This was not an optimistic
speech. I guess you're right.
He was like saying, I'm going to fix, and he was making all kinds of crazy promises. I'm going to eradicate ISIS. I'm going to, this American carnage stops right here, right now.
But he's been saying those two things since day one.
Yeah, and the thing is, when you're the difference between politicking and governing is very important. You know, in politicking, you make these promises, you say, oh, things are going to get great. And then when you start to govern, you've got to manage expectations. The public, you know, his supporters now think he's going to do all this, you know, all these incredible things right off the bat. And just this morning, he said, we're not going to be involved in the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the trade deal. Mm-hmm. And they're signaling that they're going to renegotiate NAFTA, the 90s trade deal.
Country by country. But even the way he addressed NAFTA over the weekend was a weird kind of a taunting way of, have you heard of NAFTA? Like that, like the way he throws it out, like it's a crazy word.
He's snarky. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Well, kind of childish. And then, of course, on Saturday, he goes to the CIA and stands in front of this memorial wall. And instead of, you know, making it about the CIA and about, makes it about how many times he's been on the cover of Time magazine and how smart he is. And then he gets into this spat with the media about how big the crowd was at his inauguration. A couple hours later, he sends his new press secretary out for his first meeting with the White House press corps, and the guy just lied. I mean, you know, we talked about, oh, well, they weren't accurate. These were lies. He told four or five provable lies. Mm-hmm. It wasn't spin. It wasn't, you know, they said, talked about alternative facts. These were lies. I mean, he said, you know, the TV ratings, he talked about the metro ridership in Washington, D.C., these were all lies.
I asked this of Steve Bertrand earlier. Should the President of the United States pay that much attention to how many people were at the inauguration? Should it bother him that much to the point where he sends out a press secretary to say, oh, no, there were a lot of people there. The press is lying to you about
this. The first time he goes out, the guy goes and talks to the media. This is like an opening bid. This is, begins the relationship between Donald Trump and the White House press corps, officially begins it.
Yeah.
And they started off on probably the worst note that I've ever seen. And I, you know, this guy, Sean Spicer, I asked Kevin if he would pull some clips, because Spicer was interviewed by David Axelrod not too long ago, and he was very emphatic about the importance of telling the truth. And can we play those? I just love to hear those.
Here's another question. Will Trump's staffers lie for him? Does Sean Spicer remember saying this 3 weeks ago?
The one thing that, whether you're Republican, Democrat, Independent, you have your integrity. I may tell a reporter I can't comment on something, or, I'm not able to discuss that, but I've never lied. And I don't think, and I don't intend, I would argue that anybody who's an aspiring communicator adhere to that. Because if you lose the respect and trust of the press corps, you got nothing.
To be fair to Sean Spicer, he said that prior to this weekend. So to be fair, at that point, he had lied, but since then he has.
I mean, was there one more clip too? Yeah, let's play the other one too.
You've got nothing, he says. So does Spicer have anything? Has he squandered all of the goodwill he's built up over the years? Or is it a chance to repair this relationship? Can he win back his credibility? This is all about credibility, after all.
He will be speaking at 12:30, and we will be running that here on WGN Radio.
That'll be interesting. Yeah, that was Brian Stelter, the CNN host, who was paraphrasing and asking the questions about him. And you know, the issue is, you know, when you have to tell, you know, you have to be fact based. And when he comes out and says that, you know, that Trump's inaugural crowds were bigger, you know, the biggest ever, this is the biggest ever, period, and so on. I mean, that is, you know, that's what they call gaslighting, you know, where you're telling somebody something that's completely not true, and you're telling them over and over again, and to try to make them believe something
Kim
that
Jong-un
is not true.
Kim Jong-un is the patron saint of this.
It's like, yes, and Donald Trump went out to the golf course and shot 13 holes in one. I mean,
right.
It is North Korean level lying. And again, you know, people say, well, Obama lied about Obamacare. Yeah, he did. And I called him out on it at the time. And every politician spins and shades the truth and says they don't know something when they do know something. I mean, there are all kinds of ways that they do this. But this is an entirely different level.
All right, let me draw out a scene for you. First of all, it should be a non-issue. The amount of people who showed up to the inauguration should not be a debate. If you're the president of the United States, you shouldn't care. People show up. That's all you need to know. All right. So either President Trump or an intermediary comes to Sean Spicer and says it's very important to Donald that we get this message out that he had the largest crowd and everything like that, even though it's not true. This is the message that they want to convey to the American public. If you're Sean Spicer on day one or day two, depending on if you consider Friday a day, do you say, yeah, no, we're not going to address that. We're going to get right to the meat of issues. We're not going to even talk about this. It's not important.
You like to think that he would.
I would love to think that he would.
You really like to think that someone would have that kind of integrity, and especially someone in his position where, you know, he's a big shot in Washington. He's not going to go hungry if he stands up and says, I'm not going to say this. And my guess is that Trump would not have pushed him if he had pushed back, because Trump knows that it would have been a pretty lousy thing for his press spokesman to quit on day one.
Right.
That would be, you know.
Trump would have pushed back. I think Trump wanted that out there.
I would have said, if you want to say that, send somebody else out there, or you go out there and say it yourself, which he already had said it. He had said the same thing at the CIA briefing. I mean, I thought it was really infamous of Spicer. They're calling him Baghdad Sean now.
I know.
Sending him out there to lie on Trump's behalf. That was a terrible thing for Trump to do. It was a terrible thing for Spicer to do, because he's got to. It is all about communicating the White House message and transmitting it to the public through the White House press corps.
Yeah.
If the White House press corps doesn't trust you to say whether it's, you know, sunny or raining out, whether it's night or day, you know, then that really gets in the way of your message. And Trump talked about, well, I'm at war with the media. He is picking a lot of these fights with the media. A lot of those people in the White House press corps, they're just there to do their jobs. They're there to assemble information and present it and send it out on the wires and put it in their magazines and newspapers. And they're not necessarily out to dig dirt on Trump. The people who Trump's got to worry about media-wise are people who are not in that White House press room. They're the people who are out there, like David Fahrenholz of the Washington Post, who's been digging into his business dealings and his charitable dealings.
Yeah. All right. Let's pick it up right there, because there's other questions to be asked about just that. 312-981-7200 if you want to jump in. It's Bill and Wendy along with Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune on WGN.
How bizarre, Bill.
How bizarre is right. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leffen and it's Wendy Snyder. Eric Zorn is joining us from the Chicago Tribune, as he does every Monday, to talk about whatever is going on in the world. And this week in particular, it's the first weekend of the presidency of Donald Trump, so we're focusing mainly on that. We're at 312-981-7200 if you have a question or a comment.
Shall we take a phone call?
Yeah.
Which one you want, Bill?
Oh, it's up to you, whichever.
Hi, Mary. How are you?
Hi. I have to really differ with you, Wendy, about your comments about Friday's speech. It was not one iota presidential. He had the platform of the world standing there in front of him. And he went back into narcissism and negativity, and how President Obama and Vice President Biden sat there with their heads held high was amazing, just amazing. He just could not say one nice thing. It was an election speech, like trying to get elected. It wasn't a presidential speech, not at all.
And in your opinion, I thought he sounded presidential because that's the best I'm going to expect from Donald Trump. He stuck to the script. He stuck to the prompter. He did not go off. I don't know. I feel like I can't go against what he was saying. We all want this country to be better. How it's going to happen, I don't know. And it did get dark, that I will admit. It was not hopeful.
I thought he got very dark. And even his body language, walking out with the thumbs up, it was just like, come on. This is a very solemn oath you're taking right now. This is not one of your campaign stops. And he's going to have to learn how to handle that, because he is not handling it the right way at all.
Mary's right.
We want it to be better. We want it to be, we want there to be peace between Democrats and Republicans right now. Oh, my God. I think he just forged backwards again. And then Saturday and the Spicer, who needs to get a suit that fits him. Oh, my God. Spicer just really messed it up. And that guy was put under pressure to talk. But I find it shocking
that he didn't say no as press secretary. I don't want to say that stuff. Maybe he did. I don't know that we know that.
He just failed. He failed his first test.
But he did.
Trump did, and Mary's exactly right about Trump's speech, that it needed to be more inclusive, more unifying, and it needed to be less.
But he's not like that. I didn't expect it to be more unifying.
I know he's not like that, and that's
and it's great that he had a platform to do it, but.
The day after the election, he was actually a nice man. He was nice. He said, we're going to change up Obamacare. That's what he said that day. And we're going to make, we'll talk about the wall. He was a little bit like, oh, my God, this has been the worst election. We got to just unify. And he gave a glimmer of hope, but it's all gone again. And I don't know if you had the opportunity to watch Meet the Press yesterday. That Kellyanne Conway pretty much threatened Chuck Todd. If you're not going to listen to us and get along with us, we're going to stop having interviews with you. Oh, okay.
I don't think they're going to miss much if they don't talk to Kellyanne Conway. Frankly, I mean, she's a slick and disingenuous a spokesman as I've ever seen. She's very good at what she does.
Accusing Chuck Todd of being overly dramatic as he was recounting the weekend. And she said, you're being overly dramatic. And that's when she pulled out her alternative truths line, which I think will live on in infamy for decades and decades.
But she did threaten him. Don't you remember that?
She said, I'll have to reevaluate our relationship or something like that. Yes.
It's 48 hours since you got into office. Please don't do this to us, And that's why I did attend the rally on Saturday. It was the most overwhelming, wonderful day ever. It was beautiful weather. Everybody got along. There were people holding Trump flags on Jackson. Nobody booed him. It was like the most delightful, upbeat day since, really, Obama got elected the first time.
Excellent. Mary, we appreciate it. Thanks for the call.
Okay.
And that's it. If we have differing views, we should be able to discuss it. Anna, you have a differing view than our last caller.
I do. I heard Mary say that, it wasn't a presidential speech and so on and so on. They were embarrassed. It was a speech that spoke the truth about what's going on in the country now. And, that's probably why Hillary lost, because she didn't tell the truth. Probably why Trump won, no matter what he does say things that are off the wall at times, but he spoke to people the truth. There is a lot of stuff happening in this country, and, sugarcoating it or making a speech, when he was inaugurated and so on, that is going to make everything look peachy and clean, wonderful, I don't think that's what people know better now. They know it's not a good thing happening in the country. Everything he said is happening, is the truth, and we want to see somebody come in and clean it up the best they can.
Eric, Eric is closing his eyes listening to you talk.
Well,
I don't know how he's going to clean it up.
First of all, he exaggerates the problems in the country. I mean, he made the country sound like a hellscape, you know, basically. And I don't think that it is. I mean, we've had 80 straight months of job growth in this country. Unemployment is as low as it's been in many, many years. Stock market is about to break 20,000. I mean, it's not like the country is falling apart. And he made it sound this terrible place. You know, the reason that a lot of factories are closing is jobs are going away is technology is replacing jobs. Automation is replacing jobs, and they are going overseas. It's true. But, you know, on balance, trade with other countries is good for the country. So he's got all these simplistic ideas. He's overstating the problems. He's overpromising. And it wasn't an optimistic speech. And no one should say, oh, everything's great. We're all happy. Everyone should say, like, we have problems. Every inauguration speech that I've read says, you know, we have problems. We're facing these issues, but we can do this together. We're all together, Republicans and Democrats. And there was very little nod to that. Mostly it was about him and what he said he was going to do and how horrible things are in this country. And I just think that was the wrong approach.
Anna, you have 20 seconds.
You know, I love this country. I wouldn't go anywhere else. And you know, I'm not crazy about Trump and, you know, a lot of the things he says. But I didn't understand any of this stuff with when it comes to, you know, economy, whatever. But as far as crime, I mean, that's what got to me. It is bad. You can't say, and I live in Chicago, in the Chicago area, you cannot say that things are not bad as far as crime goes.
But I don't believe that Donald Trump is the one to fix that. I mean, do you?
No, I mean, he can't fix it alone, but maybe put in some sort of plan where, you know, the police, everybody else, you know, together, works together on fixing it. I mean, it's got to get fixed at some point. Otherwise, it's going to spiral even more out of control. And who wants to live in a city like that?
Well, thank you for your call, Anna. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Fix it.
Does it? Yeah, please. If we can fix it, fix it.
That's what I mean. How can you disagree with what he's saying? We have problems with gangs and everything, and it's like, we're going to fix it. It sounds good. That's what I'm saying. The speech hit home with people who believe he's going to do it. I'm just skeptical as to how he's going to do everything he has promised
everyone. Well,
that's
of course me. And on Friday's paper, I presented a whole list of statistics. Mm-hmm. Just and basically, it was just starting line. This is where we are right now. This is where the unemployment rate is. This is where the gas prices are. This is where, you know, drug abuse is. All these, I put as many numbers as I could, updated them as much as I could. You know, the abortion rate also, and see where it goes. And if all these numbers improve, then, you know, I guess we can start worrying about size of inaugural crowds for the second time around.
That's fine. That's Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune. Thanks, Eric. Appreciate it. We'll check in with Steve and find out what he has on the Wintrust Business Lunch next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
You've been listening to live coverage of the White House press briefing. Sean Spicer there, the press secretary for President Trump, talking and gave quite an outline of the future of the week. The president has a very busy week. Theresa May coming in later in the week. But then about 25 minutes into it, he got the question, will you ever knowingly tell the American people an untruth from that podium? And the press secretary, Sean Spicer, said no. He said sometimes facts are presented as the best they can in the time frame that they have. And sometimes those facts aren't incorrect. And he said that they would always do their best to correct them and to make it right. That's a question now that will be pursued, because I don't know that they did correct the statements that were made on Saturday until today. But we'll continue to follow that. Bill and Wendy are in the studio.
Yes, we are. And I did hear him mention something about the gathering at the inauguration. Now it's all of a sudden, when you add streaming and all these internet, that's what we meant. It's the most viewed inauguration. That's not
the most attended.
Yeah, that's not what was said on Saturday.
No, he said it was he said both watched and attended. You know, he did say that, and he could have a case for that. But I mean,
he could have a case for most watched. He can't have a case for most attended.
No,
can he?
No,
pictures prove otherwise. Today, his focus was on watched more than attended.
Yeah, I didn't hear that coming up that much on Saturday at all. It did.
It did. But the other thing was they're right in that there was misreporting or a tweet from someone in the pool who said that this bust of Martin Luther King had been removed from the Oval Office. Mm-hmm. That did go out. That was incorrect. And, you know, that's not something that is acceptable. And but what was unusual today was that, you know, the reporter sort of said, or the press secretary sort of said, where's our apology to the president? And the reporter who did it not only apologized, via Twitter. But Sean Spicer then responded via Twitter, apology accepted.
Yeah. So why now is it a whole different story? Interesting. You know what? We have to take a quick break, and then we'll come back. And 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy here on 720 WGN.
All right. We're talking a little bit about Sean Spicer's press conference there. There's a very funny thing I just saw over at Dallas Stars. At the Dallas Stars game on Saturday, they put up on their Jumbotron, they showed a picture of the crowd, and it said, tonight's attendance, 1.5 million. Which is a very subtle way of saying sometimes the numbers just don't quite add up. I'm amazed that this is an issue that the president or his people are saying, hey, let the American public know that we had more people watching us and attending us. It's such a non-issue. Why does that become a thing?
That's what upsets me so greatly.
There's a billion problems. Why spend any amount of time on that one? On how many people attended or watched the inauguration?
Because some people it is important to.
I guess.
And it just seems terrible that that's the first thing out of the box.
Right. Right.
That really bothers me.
It should.
And we had mentioned it was reported that the bust of Martin Luther King Jr. was removed. And the reporter who erroneously reported that apologized via Twitter. And
what's behind that? Was he joking? Was he mistaken?
No, he was mistaken. He went in there, and apparently there'd been this controversy over a bust of Winston Churchill that Barack Obama had taken out or something. I don't get it. But if you might remember, the president on Friday went in and had a series of signing of documents.
Right.
And there were pool reporters in there. They don't bring in every reporter. They bring in a few to represent. The bust of Winston Churchill was visible. So the reporter, and I'm sorry, I don't off the top of my head know who was in the pool, then thought, well, what's it replacing? And looked around for the MLK bust, didn't see it, and tweeted out apparently that it had been removed. Later, when he was given evidence that it was there, he said that apparently a Secret Service agent was standing in front of it and he didn't see it.
All right.
Now, that's a mistake. You should not report that without checking it. I mean, just by your own sort of vision, you should then go to the, I mean, I'm not telling them how to report,
right,
but
sure.
You know, say, hey, I noticed it wasn't here, what's the deal? Apparently that wasn't done. So that's how that happened.
And that was Time reporter Zeke Miller.
Who
then did pretty quickly apologize on Twitter.
And Spicer accepted, apology accepted. Someone was texting saying, didn't know much about this. It wasn't publicized much because it was via Twitter, but it seems like that's the best way to get a hold of Donald Trump or Mr. Spicer.
Yeah, I guess so.
That's the way people will be communicating right now.
Yeah. Steve, several people have alluded to this over the past couple days because Donald Trump has only been in office. This is day four. So a couple of people have alluded to this. That the press is going out of their way to nitpick and find little things about him and his staff. Do you agree with that or disagree with that?
I think the press has to be careful not to look at everything now and to prove exactly how that might be incorrect. You can go overboard on that. So, yeah, I think that's a real concern. I have never seen a news briefing at the White House to what I saw on Saturday.
Yeah.
When things were clearly untrue.
Right.
Being told. So I think the texter whoever said that is correct. You have to be careful. But I think we also witnessed something pretty extraordinary on Saturday. And it happened from the president at the CIA as well when he said that the press was creating his feud with the intelligence community.
Which is just not true.
Well, there are certainly tweets from the president-elect at the time that would indicate that he had real trouble with the intelligence community.
And Do tweets count? Because does Donald Trump know that? They can and will be used against you? It's just Twitter.
Right. But it's Twitter now has become, I guess it's always been public record, but now it's almost
his communication.
Yeah. It's his means of communicating. Right. Right.
What if Twitter just all of a sudden implodes and we don't have
Twitter anymore?
It'd
be replaced by something Twitter-like, right? They'd find something. I mean, if that were to happen, they'd find something that's
He'd ask people exactly to meet him on his MySpace page.
Right. Meet me on MySpace. I got something to
Thank
say.
Thank God I still saved my MySpace page.
You're fine. All right. Let's do this. We have to take a quick break. There's news coming your way next, and then on to calls and thoughts. 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Making a return visit to the show, one of our favorite comics, one of our favorite actors.
Period.
Period. And an all-around nice guy, Louis Anderson, is with us. Louis, how
What's
are you?
Up?
How are you, buddy?
I'm so great. How are you guys?
We're fine. We need to congratulate you on something. Emmy Award-winning actor for Outstanding Supporting Actor in a Comedy Series. That's Louis Anderson for his work on Baskets. And boy, we couldn't be more thrilled for you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. I'm humbled by it. You know, really, it's a great honor that I got so lucky.
That show, you know, Bill actually turned me on to Baskets. You know, our friend Louie, he says, why don't you watch this show? And it is funny, touching, heartbreaking, loving. It's got all these emotions rolled into one show.
Well, you know, I can't take credit for, you know, the writing and all that. You know, I had some part in helping with my character, but, you know, that we have a great writing group. And Jonathan Kreisel, who's from, you know, Portlandia and Men Seeking Woman and Saturday Night Live, and he's such a great director. And then Louis C.K. and Zach Galifianakis and... You know, it's just such a great creative group of people that I think we're trying to do something different, and I think it worked out where we were able to.
Louis, there's a story that's going around about how they came to hire you for the role of Zach Galifianakis' mom on the show, but I want to hear it from you if the story is true. Is it?
Well, you know, the one where they called me?
Yeah, where they were looking for somebody to play the mom, and they needed somebody kind of like your mom from your stand-up.
Yeah, I think what the thing that they tell me, Louis and Zach, so I think you can take their word for it. They said Louis called me and he says, I'm here with Zach and we're doing a new sitcom and we'd like you to play a character. And I said, yeah. And they said, we'd like you to play Zach's mom. And I said, yeah, I love it. And I think the thing was that Louis had asked Zach, well, what does the character sound like? And Zach made a sound and he goes, you mean like Louis Anderson? And he goes, yeah. And he said, should I call him? And he goes, yeah. So they called me. It's the funniest thing. They called me, and I agreed to do it. And it's a great decision I made, I must say.
Well, that character in particular, and, you know, Louis, for years and years and years, part of your act has been your mom. You bring your mom into many of the stories you do in your stand-up. And I always thought to myself, that character is so dimensional and so relatable. We all have a mom that's like Louis Anderson's mom. And now when we see it in three dimension on television, I just say to myself, I don't know who they could have gotten to play a more loving, yet sometimes hard to deal with mom.
Well, you know, they did have a woman in, I forget her name, a British actress, actually. They had a person in mind for the character. And she wasn't available, so I should call and thank her, really.
Yes, you should. That would be the right thing to do.
That would be the fair thing to do, don't you think?
Absolutely.
But, yeah, I'm so fortunate and lucky. And then I just went in, and we went in, and we, you know, when Louis C.K. does everything under wraps, you know, he doesn't talk about the scripts. They don't tell who's in the thing. They don't do any of that up front. And so it was under the secrecy of a very, like, you know, small group of people. We went in and shot the pilot, and then people found out I was in the pilot, and they said, what do you play? And I go, I play Zach's trainer.
Mm-hmm.
And because I don't know how we kept the secret as long as we did, because until a week before, nobody knew. And then a week before, they released the viewing tapes for the you know, the critics and that, and the cat was the mom was out of the bag.
Yep, I guess so.
Now, did you just grow your hair, Louie, or is that a wig?
Yes. What, doesn't it look real?
Yeah. It does, because Bill and I had a little side bet. I said, Louis just let his hair grow. And Bill said, no.
I went with wig.
It's a wig. It's a wig.
Damn, I lost.
Oh.
It does look real.
It does. And that's the greatest thing about it, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then, you know, I try to make the character disappear. I try to make Louis Anderson disappear and just have the character there.
Yep.
Louis's gone. And that's what it is. I mean, you don't really change your voice, but you really feel that that's a mom. And moms are loving, but are very critical. At least mine was. And I think a lot of moms were like that.
Well, you know, they're that passive aggressive, especially in the Midwest.
Yeah.
That, well, I don't know. Are you going to wear that shirt? What? Are you going to wear that shirt? Oh, God, I guess not. God, well, that's good, because it doesn't look good on you.
Right. There's a way of getting the point across.
Can't you just say it doesn't look good on you? You have to go through that whole backward deal where you make me feel horrible. I'm just saying, I don't want people to ridicule you. What? Jesus, shut up.
Louis, when they call your name, when you're sitting in the auditorium with all these great actors and you had some pretty stiff competition and they say the winner for supporting...
Oh, my God. I was so shocked. I have to be honest with you.
But doesn't it validate... You say to yourself, I've had a really good career and now this. It's such a nice cherry on top of the cake, isn't it?
Yes. In fact, it's a whole piece of cake, the ice cream and the chili. I mean, it really is. I feel so vindicated by it all.
Yeah.
I worked really hard on it. I have so many people there to thank. I mean, it's that whole crew and everybody and Jonathan especially. And, you know, and Zach is such a great actor and a great person, and Martha. And we just had a blast. I think that was a big part of it, having fun.
Yeah.
It shows.
We had fun. And this season, I feel like is, I don't know if you're supposed to say this stuff, but I feel like this season is better than last season.
Really?
Tough to top that.
Last season was great. Yeah. But I think I hope we did. I mean, it's really good. I mean, I never worked harder. I know that.
Well, you have every right to be proud, because it really is. It's the most bittersweet television show I've ever seen. You're laughing hysterically 1 minute and just feeling so much sadness the next, and it just goes back and forth. I love it.
Well, I'm glad you do. I love doing it. We shot all 10 episodes, and they were a lot of work, and there were a lot of Zach does some physical stuff that's beyond belief, and you know, it's just so good. I wish I could tell you stuff, but I can't.
No, that's all right. Don't worry. But, we'll see it.
You're just going to love it. You're just going to love it. And it's going to relate to your family. And that was my goal in the whole thing. How can we get this family, you know, because Christine's whole goal is to, you know, protect her family and help them through their difficulties. And at the same time, help her through her difficulties. And so it's rich, it's deep, it's dark, it's beautiful, and it's funny.
So,
and
so
it's
true.
So real. And that's the interesting part about being a mom, is you do have your family's best interest at heart, but you got to work on yourself as well.
Right. I mean, your mom, I mean, you're no good to your family if you're not doing well yourself. So
right.
There's a lot of messages in the show, but mostly, you know, mostly we're trying to create something that people can really enjoy and identify with. And there's a very big amount of labor of love put into this show. The writers work so hard, and the cat, you know, all the crew, and the art department is unbelievable, the stuff they created this year. I'd say this year, I think the art department, I think the direction, I think Zach, I think, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of people talking about this show and the quality of all this stuff, because I think the first the first year we were trying to get somewhere and find our way, and then the second year I think people just embraced it because of the success of the first year.
Louis Anderson is our guest. He's appearing at the City Winery. You got a show coming up on two shows coming up on Sunday. Citywinery.com/Chicago. Louis, sit tight. We got to take a quick break, and then more with the great Louis Anderson coming your way next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Well, a few months ago, our friend Louis Anderson took home an Emmy Award for his work on the television show Baskets, Best Supporting Actor, but he's always a stand-up at heart. He's performing at the City Winery this Sunday night. Oh, I'm sorry, Sunday the 29th. Two shows. Go see him at the City Winery, citywinery.com/Chicago for all ticket information. Louis, do you remember the moment in your life where you said to yourself, I'm going to be a stand-up comedian?
Yeah. I mean, I did it on a dare. You know that, right?
I did know that, yeah.
I didn't.
Yeah. Well, now you do.
Who dared you?
A friend of mine, we were working in a shelter. We were social workers, and we were there were these comics, and I said, oh, these guys are not that funny. They were at a club. And you know how you do that thing where you have no right to do it, but you do it anyway.
Yeah.
That's how we got our radio show.
Windy. Windy in the Windy City.
Yeah.
Anyway, never heard that before. But anyway, so he said, well, why don't you think you're so funny? Why don't you try it? I go, I will. I signed up for the next week. And October 10th, had all my friends down, my family, my mom and dad came. You know, just a one-time lark.
Yeah.
And I got up on stage and I went, oh, I could do this.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I got some laughs and I went, oh, huh, this is a good job. You know, because I've been looking at a job that was about an hour a night.
Yeah, that's the one. You picked the right one. Louis, do you remember the feeling you got when you looked over and you made Johnny Carson laugh? What did that do for you?
I was out of body experience. I rose up above my body and watched the whole thing. It's the weirdest thing that happened to me. I don't know if I ever told you that, but I was out of my body for a few seconds, and there's Johnny hitting the desk laughing, and here I am. I go, oh my God, that's me. I'm in there. Get back in there. You know, I was completely freaked out in one sense, but it was surreal. It was all slow motion. And then then suddenly I was back, you know, but I had the weirdest experience. I've had a few experiences like that. And, but that one, I remember when Johnny laughed, I went, ooh, that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it's one of those dream come true things when you're a comic, you know, especially back then the gold standard was Johnny Carson.
Yeah.
So if you got on Johnny Carson, that was like, that was your chance to, that was your, you know, what do they call that when all the football players go to their, to the thing for, to show off their skills?
A draft?
Yeah, no, it's the,
Louis, we don't know because we have the Bears here in town, so we don't know what that feels like.
Combine, Kevin says.
Combine, that's right, when you go to the combine. Anyways, it was my chance. I'll never use that reference.
Yeah. I was messing it up with concubine. I was
concubine. Yeah. Is that it?
Wendy. Oh God! I
are you gonna make it?
Oh no! Wendy killed Louis Anderson.
Wendy killed Louis.
Oh no! What a horrible way to end this.
Wendy always kills everyone. Sick of her.
And then, Louis, can I ask another moment from your life? What is it like to sit in the Hollywood Squares, to look around and go, there's a famous guy, there's a famous woman, there's a guy with a puppet. I'm in the Hollywood Squares.
Well, I did what any Midwesterner would do. Oh, this is really cheaply made.
It looks like it would be. And where's Charlie Weaver?
Yeah.
Yeah, Charlie Weaver. And that was the most exciting. Oh, I love that. That was so much fun.
It looks like fun.
Fun that was, yeah.
You've had.
And, you know, I just did a new game show with Byron Allen's company called Funny You Should Ask.
when can we see that?
I don't know. You know, I think it's a brand new. We were shooting a pilot, and it was Howie Mandel was there, and Tom Arnold, and oh God, there's a million people there. But it was like a Hollywood Squares, but we were in kind of chairs, you know, kind of like it was a new. It's a new incarnation. It was really funny.
Hollywood Chairs.
So yeah, Hollywood Chairs. Oh, that's not bad. But funny you should ask is what it's called. And you have a chance to give two answers, you know, and they give you the one, and then you try to write a funny one, and that was one of my favorite jobs of all time. That's I had my best ad lib of all time on Hollywood Squares. I can tell you that.
What is? So. Can you remember it? Do you want to say it?
John Davidson, remember him?
Sure.
Yes.
The girl with something okay. extra.
The dimples.
Yeah, the big hair.
Yeah.
So he said, "Louis, if you're having sex." And the phone rings, what do you do? And I said, you put down the sandwich? that secured me on getting the job at Hollywood Squares again.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's really funny. What do you think it is about people from the Midwest that lends themselves so well to comedy? So many great comedians come out of the middle of the country. Good ones in New York and Los Angeles, too. But there's something special about the guys in the Midwest. What is it?
Well, the cold, you know, you're in the house for 9 months from the cold weather.
Yeah.
So you just turn, you just, everything's like, you just come up with jokes, you know, your mom, can we get some extra butter? Let us eat your party first, man. You know, it's those kind of things. That just, it's kind of like glib. It's kind of like, you know, sarcastic.
Yeah.
But, you know. You're in the house for 9 months with people.
Yeah.
You know, and you're thinking, oh, God, these people. And and then you see the irony and how funny, you know, like, you know, Chicago knows this. In the Midwest, you have a term that isn't on the East or West Coast or the South. It's good gloves. Are you going out? Yeah. You got your good gloves? You know, there's no good gloves anywhere else. You have to have categories for gloves. You're in too cold of a climate.
That's so true. That's so true. Will you do this for the rest of your life, do you think? Will you be a stand-up forever?
I think that it's kind of like some sort of sickness.
Yeah.
Where in order to get rid of the cough, you have to go and do stand-up.
Yeah.
You know, I think here's what, as long as I have a desire, you know, my thing is I like that I can make someone happy with just the things I say, and I can make them forget about their troubles. That's my favorite thing.
Isn't
you know,
that
when
the
people
most...
come up to me after the show, you know, I get a little emotional, but this last weekend I was in New York, and a guy came up to me after the show. He goes, "Hey, I just want to thank you because my dad was so sick and we came to your show and it was the only time that he had any relief from his pain." And he laughed and he laughed and he laughed. And I mean, to me, that's why I do it.
That's beautiful.
That kind of stuff, you know, or people say, you know, my dad was sick and another one I just had recently and we got your videotape and he watched it all the time and it made him feel so much better. And so, you know, I can't top that stuff.
Yeah. That's fantastic.
That is so meaningful. And you are so great with the fans.
I never turned on my phone, you know, like
ever.
You just shouldn't. I was at the Comedy Store when I first started them. A comic, I was standing with a pretty famous comic, and a kid ran up and said, "Hey, will you sign this?" And he goes, "No, I don't sign things." And the look on that kid's face really resonated with me. And I thought, geez, it only would have taken you a second to sign that thing. I didn't say anything to the person because I thought, well, but later that person became much more friendly towards their fans. So
good.
And so I was happy about that because really, if my signature, which is, you know, quite a flourish. can make someone happy. Holy mackerel, right?
Yep, so true.
I mean, I don't care if it's in their pocket and they wash it and then throw it out. I don't care about that.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean, that whole thing? And if somebody wants to get a selfie, yes. But, you know, try not. Let's shoot it from the eyes up.
Well, they do take it from above, right? Because that's way more flattering when you're kind of looking up.
Yeah, Venus. We try to get Venus to take it. Hey, what is that?
That looks like Louis Anderson. Louis, we're so happy for you, not just for the Emmy just for being on a great television show, Baskets, but for continuing to make people laugh in your stand-up. Louis is appearing at the City Winery this upcoming Sunday night, the 29th. You got two shows. Go see him. Go to citywinery.com/Chicago or Louis' own website, louisanderson.com. Louis, keep it up. You're doing great.
All right, thanks. You guys, I love you guys. I hope you have a great 2017.
You too, Louis.
Yeah, I hope you get through the winter, okay?
It'll work.
We'll
Take
wear
care.
Our good gloves. Love you.
I'll see you Sunday. Come on out Sunday, folks.
Perfect.
I'm going to have them butter me before I go on. So. I'm always funnier when I'm slippery like that. Bye, you guys.
Love you.
Bye,
thank
Louis.
You.
Louis Anderson, on butter sometimes, not on butter at other times. You pick the show. Two shows at the City Winery on this Sunday night. We'll take a quick break and then some news. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, you know what I forgot to ask you? After the march the other day, the march that wasn't a march because too many people showed up
right.
at the rally, so the planned march really couldn't take place.
They had
right?
nowhere to go.
They had nowhere to go.
They were already there.
Yep. Right. All right.
Were they marching in place?
No. They opted to not make any marching type moves, which was wise.
They
too
really
many
didn't move from anywhere.
There was no room for them to, honestly. They were, you know, to march when they thought 65,000, and then, I don't know, they're saying 250, but so there was no
room.
Sort of outlet or, right.
Right.
Or path to go to.
They were already there.
After the march that wasn't a march took place, they were interviewing people who had attended, obviously, and there was a girl on Channel 2 whose last name was Bertrand.
Oh, really?
But it was no relative of yours that I know of. I only know of your wife and daughter.
Maybe Andrea Darlis used Bertrand
oh,
as her last name.
Oh, maybe she did.
Name. Andrea Bertrand?
Yeah, it was Andrea Bertrand.
Bertrand.
She keeps calling me Daddy.
That's weird.
I know. Now I understand it a little better.
You know,
what was her name? Do you know?
I can't remember what her first name was, but because I don't know. Your last name is not that common a last name, is it?
There's a lot of us around.
Are there?
Yeah.
All right.
So did anybody in your families go to the marches, Bill? I know your daughters and
my wife
did.
And both my daughters did.
My wife was out of town and with my son, and my daughter is studying in Hawaii this semester. So she had a little Snapchat of it going by, but she wasn't in it. I think it started in Hawaii, didn't it? Was it the woman in Hawaii?
Did it? Maybe
proposed
it. Yeah,
I think so.
Well, I did not go. I had a funeral to attend on Saturday morning, and I kind of was thinking about it like I should go.
Yeah,
I can't. I have a funeral, and then I thought I didn't want to go.
Well, a funeral is certainly a valid excuse. That's very important that you attended the funeral.
Absolutely. But I said even if I didn't have the funeral.
You still wouldn't have gone?
It's just one of those things that I didn't feel the need to do.
Well, then don't, right? You shouldn't feel obligated.
But
right.
I feel, I got to be honest with you, Steve, I feel somewhat guilty. A lot of friends of mine went and I would post stuff up on their Facebook page like, way to go. Congratulations. Good job. But I didn't feel anything in my heart to tell me to go there, and I sort of feel guilty about that.
I just say you were there. Everyone else was. Well,
but, you know, we talked about this earlier. Protesting has not been in my blood. Because of the age we are, missed the Vietnam protesting, the anti-war stuff.
But you remember them, right? Like, I remember when we would come downtown when I was a kid, you almost always saw that somewhere.
We didn't come downtown very much. Honestly, we didn't. We had Brookfield Zoo, and we grew up in Brookfield. I don't recall coming downtown very much and not really I was too little for it to make a difference to me. And I think this is something for your daughters are, what, 20?
Yeah.
My son Michael's 17, and so many girlfriends of his from school went. This is something that they, this is theirs now.
Well, I don't want to make you feel more guilty, because I don't think you should feel guilty at all. But it was really, I think, in many cases, a mother-daughter thing. I mean, there were women my age and older who, you know, have never protested, who found their way downtown for this. I mean, it was a pretty unique crowd, I think.
Steve, that's part of the reason, because I was kind of, on the days before it, I'm like, yeah, I should go, I don't know if I should, yeah, maybe. I kept going back and forth, and I got the feeling from them, they didn't say it, they would have gladly have had me
come
along.
Did they invite you, or they just assumed you weren't coming?
No, they just left it up to me. They said, if you want to come, come, and if not. And I did want to go, but I kind of felt what Steve was saying. It felt more, because they met up with other friends, other, you know, other women that were going to this thing, and I felt like I might have been intruding a little bit.
Well, then
but there
actually,
were a lot of guys there, though. I
yes, there were.
Guys.
They could have had like a Naga hide couch at the side of the march, just like at the mall,
waiting for them to
the
be finished.
Yeah, right, right. We're supporting and everything. We're here.
Right.
Steve, I actually feel less guilty if you said it was a mother daughter thing, because I don't have a mother and I don't have a daughter.
Oh.
So now I didn't feel compelled to go, and I feel like I feel a little guilty for. I feel like I should have gone, but I didn't.
I'm pretty sure this one went well enough to where they'll have another one. So if you,
but I don't want to go to that, one,
go to
either.
That one either.
I
then just don't. That's fine.
And that's why I appreciate the people that went, and I really thumbs up. Good job, you go, girl. But I didn't feel it in my heart to have to go.
You can't take away your woman card, no matter what.
No, that's yours for keeps.
I have one of those.
Yeah, you have one. It's laminated. Do you have a better, like, remember last week when we were saying, what is the best case scenario for this day? What are you hoping to have happened? And a bunch of women called with different reasons. If people weren't listening to the show last week, there was a grandmother who called who has a special need granddaughter. And she said that, I really felt like when Donald Trump was making fun of that reporter, that he was making fun of my granddaughter, so I'm kind of going to even the score on that. There was another woman who said she just couldn't live with herself if she wasn't representing herself at this particular function. There was a myriad of reasons. I kind of, when watching it on television and the aftermath on the news later, I kind of got a better understanding. They weren't trying to change anything in terms of Donald Trump being the president.
Right. They weren't trying to undo the election.
Right. That happened.
Right.
But they were just saying, you know, for whatever reason we have, we want those reasons to be known and felt, and they spanned the globe. There were so many different reasons. So for whatever your personal reason was, it was important. But I don't think you should feel guilty. Although
I do a little bit.
I get it. I totally get it.
Well, the thing too, Bill, the second question always asked was, well, what does this mean? How do they mobilize this?
Yeah. Right?
And I've been thinking of that, and that's important for these people. You know, if they want to flex the muscle that they showed there. But I hope that what's not lost, I hope they don't lose just the feeling of that day.
Right.
It doesn't have to be, I mean, I'm sure they wanted to become some sort of result down the road, but if not, it just seemed to have been a really joyful day for hundreds of thousands of people.
Yeah.
Even though they were there because they were upset.
Right. Isn't that strange?
Yeah.
But it's true.
It is strange. Mary wants to jump in. Mary, you were at the march in Chicago?
Yes, I was. I was at with two friends at Congress and Michigan. We could not even get into the crowd. It was so packed. And after about an hour standing there, we could not hear the stage. And I have laryngitis. I apologize. But that's from having a virus, not from being at the march. But the crowd started moving to Jackson West, and we followed. And we did march west on Jackson, north on LaSalle, and we got out of the line because a friend's knee started to hurt because, I have to admit, I am from the 60s. I'm 67 years old, and we joined in, and we were in awe of all the young people that were there.
Yeah.
And there was a march, and we did not even know, except for looking at our Facebook on our phones, that the main organizers at the stage, which we couldn't hear or see, had canceled the march. But oh my goodness, we watched for 2 hours as people went by on Jackson West.
it was astounding. So a lot of people will say, yes, we did march. And it was the most wonderful experience. And we even wanted to volunteer to pick up trash at trash cans. And a police officer said, no, 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 we've got it covered, because the organizers collected money to pay for that to be done.
Wow. That's well thought out. It really is. So, I'm glad you attended, Mary, and I'm glad it meant so much to you. That's great.
And I will say, if you don't mind, that already I have called my representative, and of course I'm in Illinois, but also the 10 actions in 100 days is mobilizing of doing things and getting involved at the local level. That is happening.
Good.
I appreciate you saying that. And my neighbor who went, my friend and neighbor, said that her New Year's resolution in 2017 is to be more active in things that mean more to her. So this maybe did spark something for someone. It certainly did in you, Mary. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much. And I love you guys.
Thanks, Mary.
Thank you.
Have a good week.
Now I feel more guilty.
Because she loves you?
No, just because I didn't want to spark anything.
Oh.
That came out wrong.
Yeah, a little. All right, a quick break, and then more of your thoughts and your calls and your texts. We're at 312-981-7200 if you want to contribute. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I'm anxious to take Portia's
call. Is that what it is?
Yes, I'd like to talk to her. We were talking about the Women's March. I didn't attend. I kind of feel guilty for not attending. Portia, you went to the one in D.C., huh?
I did. I just got back last night. Sorry, I lost my voice.
That's all right.
We're talking to a lot of women today who have lost their voice.
That's why they did the march.
That's why my husband wanted me to do it.
Oh.
I road tripped with five other wonderful women, and it was just the most amazing experience. I mean, it was really life-changing.
And why did you go personally? Because that's what I feel bad about, is I didn't feel compelled to go, and I now today feel guilty about it.
I think I was compelled because I acknowledge that, you know, I'm a white woman who lives in the suburbs, so the Trump administration probably isn't going to really affect my life all that much, but there's so many other marginalized groups that it will, and I can't sit back and let them not have a voice. So it was sort of more of uniting with other people. We're so divided, and this, I felt so hopeful and so united with other people, not just women. There are tons of men and children there. I met people from all over the country. It was amazing.
Portia, what happens next? I mean, I know how important Saturday was, but what's the next step now?
Well, the Women's March, the people that actually organized this, and it was not organized by any sort of corporation. This was completely grassroots. They gave a specific list of things to do, and they made sure that we, like, texted our information to them. So they got data on everybody. As many women as they could, they got their information. So there's no way that you're going to have over 500,000 people just in D.C. alone and this not go somewhere. I mean, there were people protesting in tiny little towns. I mean, all over the country, all over the world. I really think this is not the end. This is seriously just the beginning of what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And the world is so divisive right now. I can only imagine it felt, as you said, there were not only men there, there were women, there were children. It was a big bonding experience where it's nice to feel like you belong to a group that thinks like-mindedly now.
No, it was very, very, very uniting. And everyone was so respectful. I mean, there was over 500,000 people there, and there was zero arrests. Zero. How can you put that many people crammed together? We could barely move. We were shoulder to shoulder walking down those streets, and everyone was so kind to each other. It was amazing.
So do you march again? Is another march going to take place?
I heard there are rumors about marching on tax day to try to get Donald Trump to release his taxes. At this point, I don't think he's not going to, and I want to move on, basically, to some other issues. I feel like if all we do is march, it's sort of, there's no more message. It's just, oh, there's another march going on. I think now we know we're here, and we know that we're a group that has a lot of power. There's more of us than there are of them. I don't want to sound like a dividing statement, but it's kind of true. I mean, Hillary won by almost 3 million votes, and that's more people even protested than that. So I think that all we need to, the next step is to, you know, write our congressmen and our senators and to go to town meetings and to write letters, and because they want to be elected again, and if they know that our voice is so big, we can affect that. we can change.
When you look at the schedule of things that are about to happen in the next several months, and you know they have threatened the idea of closing abortion clinics, and they have threatened the idea of defunding Planned Parenthood, and these are all such important issues. So if you just sit back and do nothing, then those things become reality. But if you show the numbers that showed up on Saturday are voters who really are not only caring, but that will vote against these people if they go the wrong way, that's what makes all the difference, isn't it?
Absolutely. We have to hold them accountable. We have to hold them accountable.
Yeah. Well, thank you for calling, and thank you for doing what you did over the weekend. That's great, Portia. We're in full support.
Oh, absolutely. It was wonderful. And Wendy, if there ever is another march in the future and you feel like going, I'm happy to go with you. And if you don't feel like going, I will march for you. And it's be fine.
All right.
What about the guilt march that's coming up in March, actually? Right. It's only 8 weeks away.
Right. Portia, thank you for calling. And maybe I will change my mind. I don't know, though. I'm with Bill. I got to go on the guilt march.
Yeah.
I'll be the only one there, though.
Yeah. You can be
yeah,
there.
Yeah, the only important thing is that we just all support each other, no matter what you decide to do.
Good.
Thank you, Portia.
Bye, Portia.
God bless you.
Portia. That's what I chant. All right, let's take a quick break. We've got news coming up next and then a bit more show for you. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Thank you, Steve. It's Bill F. It's Wendy Snyder. Talking about the Women's March, approximately 250,000 people participated here in Chicago.
Which
period?
Their first estimate, they were saying there will probably be around 20,000
yep.
people.
Well, that wasn't even the first, but
was the
well
first
then it was raised
lower?
To 50.
Yeah, and then I had an organizer on Thursday. They said it's 50, and she came on the business lunch and said 65.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I, my point then was, aren't you worried? Because it's easy to sign up,
yeah.
you know, not go.
Right.
And she said, well, you know, with the weather being what it is, we're pretty confident.
It was gorgeous.
So the weather added to the numbers. It was such a nice day out. Yeah, I could see where that went. And the message, I'm sure, had a little something to
do
with
it. Oh, yeah, no,
too.
But it was easier to go yeah. out and do it.
Sure.
A lot of mothers brought their sons.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
That mothers did bring their sons.
You had a funeral.
I did go to a funeral.
For America.
All right, that's Bill talking. One of Jim's cousins passed away.
Oh no.
And I don't know if I would have gone anyway. Nothing in me said, I've got to be there,
right.
And I feel a little guilty about
Despite
that.
Despite the way you're feeling and the way everyone's talking, Wendy, most people didn't go.
Right. A lot more people did not attend the march, despite the huge numbers of people who did. Steve is correct.
I know, but I feel like I let down my friends who it meant so much to. But I say, if something means a lot to you, then you go do it.
What would have had to have happened for you to go? Is there something that you go, that's it, last straw, I'm going, I have to be at this.
You know what? Honestly, maybe if I had a daughter. I am a big proponent of Planned Parenthood there. I'll say it right now.
Yeah.
That's something that's scary if it's going to be defunded.
Well, Trump's administration has said Planned Parenthood will probably continue to exist, but through private donations.
Right.
And it's very possible they'll get a lot of private donations, but they certainly won't get the amount of money that they're getting through government funding. That's for sure.
And they do so much good. Everyone who's against Planned Parenthood automatically thinks, oh, these young kids having premarital sex. Oh, abortions.
There's a lot more to it.
A lot more to it.
Yeah.
So that's maybe would have changed my mind. Ramona is on the line. Hi, Ramona. You did not march, did you?
Oh, no, that march was not for me. It only if you were conservative or with any kind of conservative group, you were not invited and told don't come.
Who didn't invite you and told you not to come?
Well, I'm with some more conservative groups.
Yeah.
And Right to Life was told not to come.
By whom? Do you know by who?
By the organizers.
The organizers.
Yeah.
They did not want, because that would be a clash, too. I think a lot of the women.
But the name wasn't leftist march. It wasn't.
It was women's march.
It was women's march. And so, therefore, we are obviously second-class women and not included.
Well, now, I find that to be interesting when I heard that in the news that some conservative groups such as yourselves, Ramona, were told to stay away. Now, that kind of is bad, isn't it? Shouldn't
it's
all
like
women?
Having a sporting event and telling the other team,
yeah,
you don't need to show up. We'll play this one. I'm surprised. I'd be very shocked.
But I did hear news reports of that a lot, and they didn't want it to turn into a pro-choice, pro-life thing. But it does seem that, you know, all women should have been able to participate. Would
and
you have gone?
I would have if I could have been with my group, yeah.
All right. Well, we appreciate you calling.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ramona.
Thanks, Ramona.
And that's what I mean. We all have differing things. She is probably not a fan of Planned Parenthood. I support it.
Yeah.
But we can still get along together, I would hope.
You would hope. It's becoming more and more difficult, and it's so sad that it is, but it is.
All right, now Mark has a differing view here. Hi, Mark. Did you participate?
Yeah, I was there. And, yes, I think as an organization, Right to Life or pro-life people were asked not to be part of the platform, but I am pro-life. I was there marching, and there was plenty of others. My group was all there. There was plenty of people around that were Right to Life and pro-life. Because I think we share more than we differ.
Why isn't that true?
That's a great way to put it.
You know, I mean, I had 99% in common with the people that were marching there, and that one, and albeit a major issue, I guess, if you're going to talk the difference between, you know, pro-choice and pro-life. But there was plenty of pro-life people that were marching, and it was a wonderful experience, uplifting, positive. And, yeah, we did march. We marched west on Jackson and north on LaSalle. And so, yeah.
What made you decide, Mark, if it's too personal, don't answer, but is there a specific reason that you decided you needed to be there on Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much stand against most things that the current president stands for.
Yeah.
And I felt like I had to be there and wanted to be there. And like I say, you know, we have the one maybe glaring difference. But there wasn't really, it was not a pro-choice rally. There
right.
was a lot of my, you know, my body, my choice. There was a lot of that kind of stuff. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that I'm confused sometimes because I wouldn't like it if the government was telling me what I could do with my body and, you know, and all that. At the same time, I don't believe in abortion, but it's a confusing issue. But as I said before, I certainly had way more in common with the group than I had against them.
Sure.
And if we're going to wait until we have every last little detail in common to get together, pretty much everybody would be out there alone. So.
And just because abortion is legal does not mean someone's going to have one. Because morally, some people are completely against it, but want the right to be able to in certain circumstances. So,
well,
just...
Yeah, no, there. Yeah, I have a family member who's an OBGYN, and there's some gut-wrenching stories out there of people who want nothing more than a family and had to go through the process for complicated medical reasons. And so the issue is too big for me to decide.
Yeah.
You know, I'm against abortion, but I know that sometimes maybe there has to be it in certain circumstances. So,
and if it's not legal, more and more women will die and be injured because of it, because they'll find other means. So that's a whole other issue in itself.
Or they'll travel to other countries,
right,
or, you know, whatever it'll take. It won't stop it. So,
all right. Well, thank you. I feel bad that our last caller didn't feel welcome because evidently they did want people there.
Well, as I said, as a group, I do believe she was right. I think the Right to Life people were asked not to be there as a group and as a platform for the march, but certainly there was plenty of pro-life people in the crowd.
Well, thank you for calling and talking about this, Mark. We appreciate it.
Talk to you soon.
Okay, thanks, Mark.
And Susan wanted to chime in on this, too. Hi, Susan.
Hi. I love your show.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say, and Mark said a lot of the things that I was going to say, but I marched in Rockford.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter happened to be the organizer of that march. But there were pro-life people there. My husband went over and shook their hand. Everybody was very respectful of everybody's opinions. It was very peaceful, very respectful. And it was just a great experience. I don't agree that people were disinvited. Everybody was welcome.
I didn't see anything anywhere that said, if you're a member of this group, or this group, stay away on Saturday. I'm if it existed, I guess it did. I sure didn't see it posted anywhere.
I actually saw things on blogs from the pro-life people saying that that we didn't, that there shouldn't be a women's march because they thought that it was all about being pro-choice, that that's what the march was, but it was, that was maybe for some people their primary, everybody had a different reason for being there.
Right.
And what I loved what Mark said is even though, they have one issue that they are very opposed on, 99% of the issues they came together on. So that is enlightening to me.
Exactly. I would like to meet Mark. It sounds like a great
guy. Susan, thanks.
Thank you, Susan.
I told you we should set up a dating hotline. You never believe me when I say we should do that. all right, let's do this. We'll take a break. There's other people that want to have their voices heard. Easy to reach us, 312-981-7200. That's call and text. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill and Wendy, 720 WGN.
This version of Ants Marching is spelled A-U-N-T-S.
You're on today. Here's a text. We were talking about the women's marches that happened all over the nation and the world on Saturday.
The galaxy.
630 says, all of these protesters and marchers are wasting their time and the rest of the country's time. It will not accomplish a damn thing. Get on with your lives. First of all, how did it waste the country's time?
I guess it remains to be seen. I don't know anybody who attended the march that looked at it as a waste of time. We've talked to a bunch of people today. I talked to people over the weekend. Nobody looked at it as a waste of time. But the bigger thing is, what happens next? What do we do with this? It's very energizing, and that's great. But to make change has to happen. So let's see what happens next.
Somebody wants me to mention Madonna and Ashley Judd, too, and you can go on your own time and watch Madonna.
She was a little violent in her discussion.
She was. And, you know, the swearing on CNN was not cool. But when she said, you know, I have to stop myself from throwing a bomb at the White House. I mean,
that's
what
a little much.
And Ashley Judd was very animated. Let me just say that.
I didn't see Ashley Judd.
Oh, my God. You got to. It's like 100 times.
Really?
Above that. Yeah.
Oh, all right.
But everyone has a right to speak their mind, and that's what makes this country free and the best country in the world. Bill? Listener Bill?
Good afternoon, guys. How you doing?
Great, Bill. What's up?
Well, I was there, and it clearly it was an anti-Trump march. And to go back to that text you just read, you know, what will happen from here? Weeks after Obama got in, people organized and created the Tea Party, which 2 years later changed Congress and really put the brakes on everything, not everything, but a lot of things Obama wanted to do. The resistance started then. So I'm sure the point is, of all of this, in 2 years' time, because there were a lot of signs that say 2 years from now, get out and vote. The idea is, you know, start some change now. You've got people's attention. They didn't go out and vote when it mattered. He squeaked by. He lost the, you know, the popular vote, but the bottom line is get out, vote, and you know, whether you take control of the Congress, make a difference in the Senate, whatever it might be, and then 2 years out from there. I mean, maybe it has awakened people, but to your point, Bill, they've got to follow up. You just can't have a great day, have all these people show up, and then just leave it there. Tea Party stayed after it. They were dogged in what they did, and they really did change, you know, from 2010. How hard was it for Obama to get stuff done? I mean, it just, that's the kind of thing that they're looking for. Okay, fine. He's got, you know, the Republicans have all three branches now. Let's get after it and see what we can do about changing that. You know, and I think that's, you know, I mean, there were so many, you know, obviously the hats, and I don't know what best describing the pussycat hats, which all came off of his comments to Billy Bush. Clearly, these were things that resonated. Women feel offended, violated. He's misogynist. Hey, I mean, listen, get on the internet and see how he treated his wife when they came up to the porter at the White House, you know, where he leaves her behind and all this, you know, his behavior towards women has been clear over the course of time. And I think, you know, they have every right, you know, people have every right to stand up and say, hey, this isn't the guy we want in there. Did they lose? Yeah, they lost. Now's the time to do something about it. And can they go somewhere from here with all of that?
Somebody else has texted, you know, I felt a little guilty about not going. And they said, why do you need to go? This is just a big hissy fit downtown and you know, going against Trump. It's not a hissy fit. And other people are saying that, too. Like, he's already won. He's your president. Accept it. No one's trying to change the results of the election. They're just marching to show they have a voice.
And it's a fuse. I mean, if this lit people, you know, and it exploded into something bigger. I mean, I'm sure the whole thing around the world, these people all feel, everybody looks to the United States for the lead. And you know, I have relatives in Europe. I mean, they're shaking their heads over this guy just based on the things they hear. Listen, I hope he does a great job. I hope he brings jobs back here and does all the things he promises. But I'm not holding my breath on all of that. And it's the thing. I mean, you know, he's just let us down in so many ways, and the way he's behaved, that, you know, the trivial nature of, you know, ratings and how it was important that, you know, we made clear that, you know, that was the most attended inaugural. I mean, those things are trivial. Is that what he's going to waste his time on? I think this has to, again, be the start of something and not just a one-time thing. And, again, I go back to the Tea Party and how they banded together, and that was a much smaller, but they were dogged and they never let it go, and they stayed after it. And by the time that next election rolled around, those midterms, you know, the Obama administration is sitting there, you know, slack-jawed because they just, you know, have lost the House. And you know, everything from that point forward was a taffy pull. And I think that's what they're trying to do here, is maybe get people's attention and do something about it.
Thank you so much, Bill.
Thanks, Bill,
for shedding some light on this. If you didn't watch Saturday Night Live this weekend, Aziz Ansari was the host. His monologue, in my opinion, was one of the best I've ever seen.
He was great.
And he was talking about the inauguration. In the very end of his monologue, we thought we'd play, because it just listen to these words.
I think Trump should make a speech, a real speech, denouncing the lowercase KKK. Don't tweet about me being lame or the show being lame. Write a speech, a real speech, because these people are out there and it's pissing a lot of people off. And I think it can make a difference, because other presidents have done things like this and it has helped. Hate crimes and stuff, it went down. You know, George W. Bush made a speech after 9/11, and it really helped. Things changed. This is what he said in the speech, and I'm paraphrasing slightly. He said, Islam is peace. The perpetrators of these attacks, they don't represent Islam. They represent war and violence. Our enemies are not our Muslim brothers and sisters. Our enemies are a network of radical terrorists. And everyone applauded. Democrats, Republicans, it didn't matter. Because it's not about politics. It's about basic human decency. And remembering why the country was founded in the first place. And I'm sitting there, and I'm watching the speech, and I'm like, what the hell has happened? I'm sitting here wistfully watching old George W. Bush speeches, just in the, what a leader he was. 16 years ago, I was certain this dude was a d-. Now I'm sitting there like, he guided us with his eloquence. I want to leave you guys with a serious thought. I know there's a lot of people that are worried right now. It's a weird time. If you're excited about Trump, great. He's president. Let's hope he does a great job. If you're scared about Trump and you're very worried, you're going to be okay too. Because if you look at our country's history, change doesn't come from presidents. Change comes from large groups of angry people. And if day one is any indication, you are part of the largest group of angry people I have ever seen. Good luck to you.
That's pretty great, isn't
yeah,
it?
He did a nice job. Aziz Ansari hosting Saturday Night Live. It's available on the internet if you didn't get a chance to see it. Watch it. You'll like it.
We're in this together. So
that's it. Let's take a quick break. Rowan Anna will be in and tell us what they have on their show next. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.